as they fall from your open hand. At the call of the wind's command, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 11th, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you were listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We're in the book of Matthew, and we're going to be looking at chapter 21 in the book of Matthew, and it is being read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 21. And when they drew nigh unto Jerusalem, and were come to Bethphage, unto the Mount of Olives, then sent Jesus two disciples, saying unto them, Go into the village over against you, and straightway ye shall find an ass tied, and a colt with her. Loose them, and bring them unto me. And if any man say aught unto you, ye shall say, The Lord hath need of them. And straightway he will send them. All this was done, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophet, saying, Tell ye the daughter of Zion, Behold, thy king cometh unto thee, meek, and sitting upon an ass, and a colt the foal of an ass. And the disciples went and did as Jesus commanded them, and brought the ass and the colt, and put on them their clothes, and they set him thereon. And a very great multitude spread their garments in the way. Others cut down branches from the trees, and strawed them in the way. And the multitudes that went before and that followed cried, saying, Hosanna to the Son of David! Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord! Hosanna in the highest! And when he was come into Jerusalem, all the city was moved, saying, Who is this? And the multitude said, This is Jesus, the prophet of Nazareth of Galilee. And Jesus went into the temple of God, and cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers, and the seats of them that sold doves, and said unto them, It is written, My house shall be called the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves. And the blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them. And when the chief priests and scribes saw the wonderful things that he did, and the children crying in the temple, and saying, Hosanna to the Son of David, they were sore displeased, and said unto him, Hearest thou what these say? And Jesus saith unto them, Yea, have ye never read, Out of the mouth of babes and sucklings thou hast perfected praise? And he left them, and went out of the city into Bethany, and he lodged there. Now in the morning, as he returned into the city, he hungered. And when he saw a fig tree in the way, he came to it, and found nothing thereon but leaves only, and said unto it, Let no fruit grow on thee henceforward forever. And presently the fig tree withered away. And when the disciples saw it, they marveled, saying, How soon is the fig tree withered away? Jesus answered and said unto them, Verily I say unto you, if ye have faith, and doubt not, ye shall not only do this which is done to the fig tree, but also if ye shall say unto this mountain, Be thou removed, and be thou cast into the sea, it shall be done. And all things whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer, believing, ye shall receive. And when he was come into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came unto him as he was teaching, and said, By what authority doest thou these things? And who gave thee this authority? And Jesus answered and said unto them, I also will ask you one thing, which if ye tell me, I in like wise will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, whence was it? From heaven or of men? And they reasoned with themselves, saying, If we shall say from heaven, he will say unto us, Why did ye not then believe him? But if we shall say of men, we fear the people, for all hold John as a prophet. And they answered Jesus and said, We cannot tell. And he said unto them, Neither tell I you by what authority I do these things. But what think ye? A certain man had two sons. And he came to the first and said, Son, go work today in my vineyard. He answered and said, I will not. But afterward he repented and went. And he came to the second and said likewise. And he answered and said, I go, sir. And went not. Whether of them twain did the will of his father? They say unto him, The first. Jesus saith unto them, Verily I say unto you, that the publicans and the harlots go into the kingdom of God before you. For John came unto you in the way of righteousness, and ye believed him not, but the publicans and the harlots believed him. And ye, when ye had seen it, repented not afterward, that ye might believe him. Hear another parable. There was a certain householder which planted a vineyard, and hedged it round about, and digged a winepress in it, and built a tower, and let it out to husbandmen, and went into a far country. And when the time of the fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the husbandmen, that they might receive the fruits of it. And the husbandman took his servants, and beat one, and killed another, and stoned another. Again he sent other servants more than the first, and they did unto them likewise. But last of all he sent unto them his son, saying, They will reverence my son. But when the husbandmen saw the son, they said among themselves, This is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and let us seize on his inheritance. And they caught him, and cast him out of the vineyard, and slew him. When the Lord therefore of the vineyard cometh, What will he do unto those husbandmen? They say unto him, He will miserably destroy those wicked men, and will let out his vineyard unto other husbandmen, which shall render him the fruits in their seasons. Jesus saith unto them, Did ye never read in the Scriptures, The stone which the builders rejected, the same is become the head of the corner? This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore say I unto you, The kingdom of God shall be taken from you, and given to a nation bringing forth the fruits thereof. And whosoever shall fall on this stone shall be broken, but on whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. And when the chief priests and Pharisees had heard his parables, they perceived that he spake of them. But when they sought to lay hands on him, they feared the multitude, because they took him for a prophet.
Okay. All right, tonight, excuse me. Tonight we're going to take a look at government by consent. We've looked at a lot of these subjects, and we've looked a little bit at government by consent, of course, over the past. But this is a paper I put together recently on a memorandum of law, or at least I updated one that we had put out before. And I wanted to start off with this because hopefully we'll have a lot of new people here, and this will give them a good idea and a view of the powers and the authorities of we the people, and that is the key. We the people hold the power, we the people hold the authority, if only that we take it. Therein a reason why we must learn about government by consent. After that, after we go through this, we're going to take a look at how we need to organize and what we need to be doing on the grassroots level. Everybody, it's time for everybody to get involved and start to organize committees of safety. So we're going to talk a little bit about committees of safety tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about the committee man process to take back control of the political process. We're going to talk about the grand jury and the trial jury a little bit, particularly the administrations thereof, and how we the people can take back control of our judicial process. We also are going to talk a little bit about the sheriff and the militia and how we need to organize, reorganize that, so to speak, and pull together the remnants that do exist on the different county levels spread throughout the United States, and draw everybody together within their counties under the committees of safety so that they can all work together in order to take back our government 100%. And, of course, we're talking about the federal government, the state governments, and our local governments, all governments. We have government by the consent of the people, as we're going to look at a little bit. We read that in the Declaration of Independence. And we're going to, again, take a look at the power and the authority of the people. Now, after we do this, look at these two things. I'm going to briefly go through the website showing everyone how we can organize on a grassroots level. And then we're going to take questions. We're going to open up to an open forum. I don't know if Brent is here yet or not, but when anybody sees Brent, maybe you can unmute him, and he can pipe in if he wants to any of the conversation, and we'll just take it from there. So, first of all, let's take a look, okay, at government by consent, and this is a memorandum of law. This is a memorandum of law on government by consent. The purpose of this memorandum is to make clear that we, the people, ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America, and reveal how we can truly have a government by consent of the people. We read in the Declaration of Independence, We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. If the people do not have a fundamental knowledge and personal control of the following concepts, they cannot have liberty. Number 1, authority. 2, jurisdiction. 3, property. 4, morality. 5, spirituality. 6, justice. 7, domestic tranquility. 8, general welfare. 9, natural law. 10, legislative powers. 11, executive powers. 12, judicial powers. 13, law and equity. 14, republic. 15, real money. And 16, political. If the people are ignorant of the Constitution, how can they know if their government servants are ignoring or upholding it? If our government servants are ignorant to the Constitution, did they lie when they took their oath to serve and protect the Constitution? If our elected and appointed servants need to consult an attorney who believes that we are under Roman law, also known as Babylonian law, and has zero knowledge of the Constitution, what does that have to say about the state of our union? Who really is running the show? It's not what we don't know that gets us in trouble. It's what we are convinced that we do know that is not true that will injure us. People have an ignorant belief that liberty is the freedom to choose, while they are unaware that our daily choices are irrelevant, and relevant choices are stacked both politically and judicially. In fact, liberty is freedom from all law except that of nature's God. There's nothing more dangerous than a closed mind. True ignorance is not the absence of knowledge, but the refusal to acquire it. Nothing in the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. It is impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. We consent to government by binding our government servants down with the chains of the Constitution. This is simply accomplished by exercising and following two unalienable rights necessary for the preservation of liberty, aforementioned as freedom from all law except that of nature's God. Number 1, we the people can control 100% of our political process by participating in the election of free and independent committeemen who will require the candidate's knowledge of the and obedience to the Constitution, and will remove them from office if they are in bad behavior by using their unalienable right to recall. Proper exercising of this unalienable right will result in the election of a true statesman that will serve the people instead of themselves. And 2, we the people can control 100% of our legislators and judiciary by either participating in the administration of the juries or responding to the call to the jury assembly. Proper exercising of this unalienable right will result in just court decisions and prevent the exercising of unlawful legislation via our unalienable right of nullification, and will prevent unjust government's accusations against we the people. Our Constitution. Preamble. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote for the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Some people might say, I didn't participate, so how can we claim the Constitution gives my consent? We need to go back to the Federalist Papers, which are a series of 85 essays arguing in support of the United States Constitution. Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay were the authors behind the thesis, and the three men wrote collectively under the name of Publius. 77 of the essays were published as a series in the independent journals, the New York Packet and the Daily Advertiser, between October of 1787 and August 1788. They weren't originally known as the Federalist Papers, but just the Federalists. The final 8 were added later. In 1789, the population of the United States was about 3.9 million. Obviously, 3.9 million people cannot debate the particulars of our Constitution which was ratified by our state legislators, who were elected by and represented the will of the people who fought for independence and participated by following the published arguments. To quote Thomas Jefferson, "We in America do not have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate." So our founding fathers stated in the preamble, they secured the blessings of liberties to ourselves and our posterity. Therefore, being responsible statesmen, friends, neighbors, countrymen, and parents wanting the best for their children and their children's children, they, by the blessings of God, produced mankind's most significant document ever written by man on behalf of man to free the spirit of just men. It cannot be denied. The Constitution has only 4,543 words, including the signatures. The Bill of Rights has only 462 words. The Declaration of Independence has 1,458 words. And yet a supermajority of the people, including public servants, are totally ignorant of its content and meaning. It is extremely disturbing that the people are so ignorant of their blessings of liberty, which has allowed our justice system to become unjust. Thomas Jefferson, the man who discovered America's freedom formula, warned us that the formula for freedom could be lost in one generation. And so it has. Jefferson said, "If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty." In U.S. history, anti-federalists were those who opposed the development of a strong federal government and the ratification of the Constitution in 1788, preferring instead for power to remain in the hands of the state and local governments. Federalists wanted a stronger national government and the ratification of a constitution to help properly manage the debt and tensions following the American Revolution. Formed by Alexander Hamilton, the Federalist Party, which existed from 1792 to 1824, was the accumulation of American federalism and the first political party of the United States. John Adams, the second president of the United States, was the first and only Federalist president. Those who identified with federalism as part of the movement were the main supporters of the Constitution. They were aided by a Federalist sentiment that had gained traction across many factions using political figures. However, this does not mean there was no heated debate over the Constitution's drafting. The most zealous anti-federalist, loosely headed by Thomas Jefferson, fought against the Constitution's ratification, particularly those amendments which gave the federal government fiscal and monetary power. A sort of ideological war raged between the two factions, resulting in the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, which is a series of essays written by various figures, some anonymous, some not, for and against the ratification of the United States Constitution. Ultimately, anti-federalists greatly influenced the document, pushing for strict checks and balances and certain limited political terms that would keep any one branch of the federal government from holding too much power for too long. The Bill of Rights, the term used for the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, is especially about personal and individual rights and freedoms, which were included partly to satisfy anti-federalists. The Constitution, including its foundational document, the Declaration of Independence, and its capstone Bill of Rights, was a well-thought-out and debated masterpiece built around unalienable rights that truly frees man to be what he was born to be, free and independent. Just laws. Government by consent necessitates that the people have control of our judicial, legislative, administrative powers and political processes. This can only be achieved and maintained by just laws. Just laws can only derive from the laws of nature's God and not men. Evidently, only a virtuous people are capable of freedom, and as nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters. Religion and morality are the essential pillars of civil society. We have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Therefore, to avoid the extremes of despotism or anarchy, the only ground of hope must be on the morals of the people. Religion is the only solid base of morals, and morals are the only possible support of free governments. Therefore, education should teach the precepts of religion and the duties of man towards God. True religion and good morals are the only solid foundation of public liberty and happiness. It is hereby earnestly recommended to the several states to take the most effectual measures for the encouragement thereof. In the latter half of the 18th century, the people formed committees of safety throughout the colonies by which the American Revolution was born. These committees filled vacancies for the Continental Congress that served as governing bodies of the United States during the American Revolution, that eventually gave birth to our republic by ordaining and establishing the Constitution that governs our government. These committees of safety, after the birth of our nation, morphed into the committeemen, who were elected within their election district for 2-year terms. These committeemen would interview candidates to fill political vacancies and then circulate petitions within their respective election districts to nominate them on ballots for the primary election, at which time the people voted for the candidate of choice to run in the election to fill political vacancies. These committeemen, when necessary, circulated petitions within their election districts to recall elected officials when they were in bad behavior. The term bad behavior in the Constitution is when elected servants fail to honor their oaths. The committeeman process empowered the people at the grassroots to have full power to choose their candidates for political office and to remove servants who fail to honor their oaths. This was the political exercise of government by consent. Until, as George Washington had warned, a small but artful and enterprising minority of cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men subverted the power of the people, usurping for themselves to the reins of government, putting in the place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, thereby obstructing the execution of the laws, and destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them up to unjust dominions through unconstitutional statutes. Likewise, the grand and petit juries also empowered the people to have government by consent through the removal of elected or appointed government servants who violated their oaths by way of indictment when Congress failed to do their duty to correct the problem via impeachment. The trial jury, through the power of nullification, could also override any legislation that they believed violated the unalienable rights of the people. Until a tsunami of bar attorneys and bar judges who have been taught to serve the will of the bar first, the will of the state second, and occasionally, if there is no conflict with the first two, their lulled to sleep client. These robotic attorneys question nothing, ignore the law of the land, enforce repugnant statutes, become lawless judges, have seized control of our juries, and have trodden our Constitution underfoot. The combination of these four unalienable rights of the people that ordained the power vested in themselves, being the unfettered author of the law of the land, committeemen, grand juries, trial jurists, is the true expression of government by consent of the governed, that we the people declared by the Declaration of Independence, ordained by Constitution, and ensured by resolve a Bill of Rights. That is what we the people, through the unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, are determined to reinstate at all cost, and only then by consent of we the people will America be great again. Jurisdiction and authority. In 1776, our founding fathers set the cornerstone of our republic by proclaiming all just powers and the people under the common law, also known as natural law, and not the laws of men, as is with other republics, and by calling upon nature's God, entitled us to his unalienable rights, thereby creating a covenant between we the people and our Creator that cannot be broken but by his wrath. We need only look to our founding documents and our common law history to learn how the people can be restored to power. The common law demands that we the people stop thinking like the slaves that we were and start thinking as the free men as we were meant to be. This requires the maturity within us to educate ourselves via Jefferson's suitable education that will give us a true understanding of liberty, again being free from man's law, to accept the responsibility of our own actions, and to recognize and acknowledge the rights of others, to exercise liberties that we may or may not agree with. This maturity is both a stumbling stone that many fall upon because of ignorance, and a prerequisite to understanding the exercising of true liberty. The attitude that we need the state to restrain people's behavior is repugnant to God and is precisely what placed America's liberty in jeopardy in the first place. This was a direct assault upon the Bill of Rights, enabling the construction of a statutory prison that has enslaved us all. As Dwight D. Eisenhower said, "We have never stopped sin by passing law, and in the same way, we are not going to take a great moral ideal and achieve it merely by law. It is here where a proper education and a moral compass play their role." Thomas Jefferson said, "I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery. Liberty demands that we do not permit the state to legislate our behavior." We the people, by the power and the authority vested in us by God, ordained the Constitution for the United States of America, therein creating three branches of government, whose only commission is to accomplish six prime directives. Number one, to form a more perfect union. Number two, to establish justice. Number three, to ensure domestic tranquility. Number four, to provide for the common defense. Number five, to promote the general welfare. And number six, to secure the blessings of liberty. Any legislative, administrative, or judicial action at any level of the government that does not serve one or more of the four said directives is without authority, and thereby is null and void. The Declaration of Independence being the foundation of all law, the Constitution being the framework of all government authority and jurisdiction, and its capstone Bill of Rights being the judge of all acts is the law of the land, and is not to be violated. These founding documents clearly defined the order by which all authority flows. Laws of nature's God, laws of we the people, and lawful acts of government. Any act of legislation, administration, or judicial that cannot trace its authority back to the Constitution is an unlawful act, and the proper remedy against any such act is nullification. The highest authority is the sovereign governor of the universe, the creator of all things, and whose jurisdiction is eternal, and even the very souls of men. In Isaiah chapter 45, verses 5 through 12, nature's God said, "I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, so thou hast not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. I form the light and create the darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Drop down, ye heavens from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open, and let them bring forth salvation, and let righteousness spring up together. I, the Lord, have created it. Woe unto him that striveth with his maker. Let the potsherds strive with the potsherds of the earth. Shall the clay say to him that fashioned it, What makest thou? Or thy work, he hath no hands? Woe unto him that saith unto his father, What begettest thou? Or to the woman, What hast thou brought forth? Thus saith the Lord, the Holy One of Israel, and his Maker, Ask me of the things to come concerning my sons and concerning the works of my hands. Command ye me, I have made the earth and created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out the heavens, and all their hosts have I commanded. In the beginning of Genesis, chapter 1, verses 26 through 31, nature's God vested man with the authority over his creation, saying, Let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowls of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fishes of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the living things that moveth upon the earth. And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of tree, of a tree yielding seed, to you for it shall be for meat, and to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. In 1776, we the people, via America's foundational document, the Declaration of Independence, covenant with nature's God, acknowledging his jurisdictions, his laws, and his entitlements in return. In 1789, we the people, by the aforesaid authority, vested in us by God, ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America, which is the law of the land. Where we said, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberties to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Therefore, considering the covenant authorities and jurisdictions this republic is founded upon, it is of no surprise to us today that God raised up a type of Osiris in President Trump to bring judgment upon the evildoers operating in the mire that has seized control of his city on the hill. Thomas Jefferson echoed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. And God promised that that judgment would come in the fullness of time in Isaiah 14, verses 21 through 27, where he said, Prepare slaughter for Satan's children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the lands, nor fill the face with their cities, their New World Order cities. For I will rise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name and the remnant, the son and the nephew, saith the Lord. I will also make it a possession for the bitten and pools of water, and I will sweep it with the broom of destruction, saith the Lord of hosts. The Lord God of hosts hath sworn, saying, Surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass, and as I have purposed, so shall it stand, that I will break the Assyrians in my land, and upon my mountains tread him underfoot. Then shall the yoke depart from off from them, and his burden depart from off of his shoulders. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out upon all the nations. For the Lord of hosts hath purposed, and who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out, and who shall turn it back? Before the mountains were brought forth, For ever he has formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. There God is sovereign, the author and the source of the laws of nature. In America, we the people vested by God are sovereign and the author and source of the law of the land. Sovereignty means that the decree of the sovereign makes the law, and sovereign courts, also known as statutory courts, cannot condemn, influence, or persuade the sovereign to make the decree. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereigns, are entitled to all the rights that will formally belong to the king by his prerogative. And the state cannot diminish the rights of the people. Supreme sovereignty is in the people, and no authority can, on any pretense whatsoever, be exercised over the citizens of this state, but such as it or shall be derived from and granted by the people of this state. In conclusion, we the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We the people vested Congress with statute-making powers. We the people defined and limited that power of statute-making. We the people limited lawmaking powers to ourselves alone. We the people did not vest the judiciary with lawmaking powers to control our behavior. In common law courts of justice, we the people are the judicial tribunal, having attributes and exercising functions independent of the person of the magistrate designed generally to hold it, and proceeding according to the course of natural law. The Constitution of most of our states assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves in all cases to which they think themselves competent, as in electing their functionaries, executive and legislative, and deciding by a jury of themselves both facts and laws in all judiciary cases in which any fact is involved. In our republic, it is not lawful for the government to exercise power without authority and jurisdiction to exercise that power. In law, authority gives permission and control over a defined jurisdiction. In America, the people are sovereign and have authority over their created government. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to legislative law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts, and the law is the definition and limitation of power. Okay. All right, we're going to take a look real quick as we can, and then move over to an open conversation if anybody has any questions or comments. But I'd like to really tonight stay focused on the subject at hand. And the subject at hand is the focus that the people are the sovereigns, that the people have the authority. And ultimately, all law emanates from us as far as the law of our land is concerned. Now, of course, the law of God is the law above all men, and we are tried by that law, and that law, God tells us, was written in the hearts of men. What we're going to first of all, I think the first thing to do is we're going to show a page here first. Let me see if I can find that page. It should be under people. Everything we're going to be looking at tonight pretty much will be under people's duty. But before we do that, I want to go over to the educational tab and click on NLA Topic and PowerPoint Videos. And on this page, we have all of our PowerPoint videos that we have up on YouTube. Of course, you can click on this and find us at YouTube, which is youtube.com National Liberty Alliance. But we also have embedded those videos here on this particular page. And at the bottom of the page, we have listed the written papers on these particular subject matters that we have posted up on YouTube, and they're PowerPoint videos is what they are. But there are a couple that we have not turned into PowerPoints yet. Last week we looked at the political parties, and we focused in on what was up with the political parties. I think it was last week, I'm pretty sure, maybe it was the week before. This week, looking at government by consent, you can find it right here. 011 government by consent right underneath these videos, and you can click on that and you can get this particular paper, reread it again. As I was going through this, there are a few things I'd like to change in it, and a couple of little things I'd like to add, and I'll see about doing that in the near future. But today we want to look in on organizing ourselves across the nation. The purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to be a facilitator to educate people, to bring a place where people can communicate and organize together and learn the way we can have government by consent. And it's called really the science of government by consent. And and so that's what National Liberty Alliance is all about. We want to train the people to structure themselves on the county level in order for them to take control of the process of government, to take control of our courts, to take control of our political process, and our enforcement power upon all that, of course, is the militia. And so we're forming committees of safety. Committees of safety is exactly what our founding fathers used in order to organize the rebellion against Britain and to create the United States. And so all 13 colonies organized themselves as committees of safety, and they sent to Philadelphia, maybe a few other places where they came together to debate and argue and discuss different things, and the Continental Congress, the forming of the Continental Congress, all of that was the actions and the work of the people on the grassroots level to put all of that together. And so what we need to do is to emanate what our founding fathers have done, to do the same thing. We are in a constitutional crisis, and the next 10 days is going to decide our future. I have confidence in what is going to happen in the next 10 days. I'm not going to get into that discussion tonight. People can bring some thoughts up if they want and maybe ask a few questions, but really we want to focus in on how we go about organizing our counties. And National Liberty Alliance, our point and the whole point of us being here or our focus is to facilitate that education, to facilitate that organization, to facilitate the communications amongst us all. We have no interest in controlling any of the people on the grassroots level. Once they're up and running and they're educated and able to do the things they need to do, and start forming their own necessities within their counties, we will always be here for advice and continued education. We also are working with the juries to bring back the common law grand juries and the common law petit juries, because right now the courts have been seized. Common law has been abrogated from the courts since 1938 through the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. And that, of course, was an act of treason. Our last paper, and by the way, that's what we sent to, that's what we looked at last week, was the paper that we sent to the judiciary. Let's see, we should find that under grand jury, action against the judiciary. And of course, anybody can go up to our weekly calls and download the MP3. We're working to get a couple of these Monday night programs done up in video because we're doing sharing the desktop at the same time. And we've been recording it in MP4s and also in MP3s. So as soon as we get the ability to post those on our site, we'll be posting them, at least the last three or four or so, and any of the important ones as we move along. But here is the Declaration to Restore the Law of the Land, which the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury came together and started to file papers. It's an extraordinary action against our government, particularly on the federal level, because that's where the real battle is. We all have problems maybe on our state level, too. When the federal level, we just take control of the state level. Not a problem. But in any event, we've gone through a lot of papers, filing papers. We actually started filing papers back in 2014 and in 2015. Which we put out the writ quo warranto in 2015, which was putting government on notice, the corporate side of government, that they're going to have to cease and desist because they violated the agreement that we have that they are supposed to be acting under, and have violated and committed treason against we the people, treason against our Constitution. So anyway, we did file all these papers. These are very interesting papers. People should read through these papers when they get the time. It is an education in itself. By reading through the papers and the work that we do here at National Liberty Alliance, we'll give you a very strong and understanding and an appreciation of common law, also known as natural law, and the difference between equity and law, where equity, of course, is that where judges come in and make decisions in courts, but that is concerning particularly people who work for the government, the agencies of the government, to write regulations and statutes and codes for them, but not for the people. We've given them no authority to write anything to control our behavior. So any statutes that they use to try to control us, as far as we're concerned, is null and void. And when we control the courts at that point, we will then prevent them from coming after people with their fiction of law. But the paper we did file last week, which is a very important paper, is this paper here filed on January 1st, 2021. It's dated January 1st, 2021, but it went out in the mail via the U.S. mail, okay, on January 2nd, which is Saturday right after New Year's. And again, basically, we started off with a statement of authority. We started talking about treason and failure for them to act in itself is an act of treason. We put the 9 federal district judges, the Supreme Court justices, we put them on notice that they have to do certain things. And if they refuse to do these certain things, then we are going to come together and consider an indictment. And so people need to be boning up on these things. This week I'll put out a paper or a page, and I'll send an email out and put out a page where people can go and start looking at the evidence and seeing what exactly it is we're doing and what we're charging them with, so that when we come together as a unified United States common law grand jury, then we can make an intelligent and educated decision on whether we should indict these people or not. As much as I hate to even think the thought, we have to consider it. But before we go into the what we want to talk about today, I just want to read a paragraph or two out of this paper. And it is I'm not going to read all the judges' names, okay? I'm going to skip the names, but we, the unified United States, and this is the conclusion of the paper, this is the order to the Supreme Court judges. We, the people of the unified United States common law grand jury, order, and then we name all of the judges, to honor their oaths and bring the inferior constituted tribunals that have polluted, and that, of course, is the 94 federal district courts, that have plotted to destroy our natural law republic back under the chains of the Constitution, or suffer the consequence of indictments for silence and refusal to uphold and protect the Constitution. The respondents' inaction has caused instability to the domestic tranquility and has placed our republic and our liberty in jeopardy. And then we continued, we, the unified United States common law grand jury, are ordering, and we named all the judges again, to honor their oaths and secure the blessings of liberty to the people and our posterity. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts of violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. We, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, has indicted more than 100 judges, mostly federal judges, with many more indictments to follow. Judges and bar attorneys have demonstrated that they cannot be trusted to impanel and orientate the people's jury. This must be implemented by the people themselves. That's the reason why we are developing the administrations for the grand and the petit juries, so that we get to orientate them. We get to lay out an understanding of things that they should know prior to them going in and fulfilling their job, to understand their authorities and their abilities to be able to nullify anything that the government has to say. And they not only get to decide the facts and the law, they also get to decide how they're going to restore the injured party. They get to decide on the decision of what is to be. Anyway, we go on. By the people themselves, we have included and ordered the respondents to order all federal district courts as follows. And so there are 94 federal districts. So there are 94 federal district courts, and actually in a lot of districts there's more than one. Maybe two or three different courts at two or three different locations, but it's one federal district. One, acknowledge natural law. They are ignoring natural law. They, matter of fact, they have abrogated natural law and they have hidden it. Provide forms to open natural law courts, also known as courts of record, at no cost to the people. Courts of justice are free. Only equity courts can charge a fee. And, of course, that's really for activities going on in the government, commercial activities that we've given authority over, particularly interstate with the federal. acknowledge the rights of habeas corpus. They have been ignoring habeas corpuses. We have filed many, many, many habeas corpuses, and we're only aware of two or three of them that really have gone through the process and was executed properly, or at least the individuals were freed. But in most cases, these judges have ignored it, and we have indicted all those judges, with more to come. Acknowledge the rules of the common law in both equity and law courts. Prior to 1934, there was no rules of the court created by any legislative body. The rules of the court were the rules of common law. Whether it was equity or law, it still was the rules of the common law. Acknowledge the law of the land. Abolish Rule 2 and 12. Actually, we need them to abolish all the rules. We, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, after 30 days, we'll be commencing a hearing to consider indictments against, and I again name all of the Chief Justices, after observing your response to the aforesaid, justice will prevail. Okay, so that's what we looked at last week. If anybody wants to get into more detail on that, and we did have some discussion on some of this, and we expounded a little more on it, you can go and listen to last week's conversation, which, let me just get to that real quick. Well, that would be under, right here, it would be weekly call. If you click on the weekly call, of course, this is where you got the instructions on how to join us on Monday night's call and the other calls. Right underneath that, we have all of the Monday night recordings. And again, we're going to put some video recordings that we have on these Monday night programs, which helps us to follow through all of the papers and different things we're looking at. And we'll file them. I'm not sure whether we'll put them on this page or another page. Maybe we'll put them on this page. We're only putting a few up maybe on this page. And then the ones that really are very important that people need to really focus in on, we'll find a page and maybe we'll post them over in under the educational tab where we had the NLA topics, which are the PowerPoint videos. Okay, but today, people's duty. This is what you are responsible for. We are in a state of emergency, and Donald Trump has really put out the message to us. We all need to stand and stand fast. You know, he's not ordering us to do anything particular as far as, but to stand fast in what we're talking about, stand fast in who we are as a people, stand fast concerning our heritage, stand fast concerning the Constitution. We need to learn these things and start organizing to take power. Because right now, the people do not have the power. They can have the power, but they can only have it if they get educated in a proper education in order to understand how to exercise that power. There are two power structures in America that we control. Through those two power structures, we control everything they do. And that is the judiciary, to control the judiciary through the juries, and having control of the juries as far as not allowing them to be tainted or to be stacked or to be polluted in any way by U.S. attorneys. U.S. attorneys and even any kind of an attorney that comes before the grand jury, any prosecutor, which are attorneys, they don't have authority under our law to go before the juries under common law. They have to go to the sheriff of the county, wherever that crime was committed. And they need to bring what their charges are and all the information they need to give to the sheriff. And the sheriff is to deliver it to the grand jury. Because the sheriff would be neutral and bring what he knows to the jury, what he sees and understands as a violation of law and the considerations for the jury. Whereas these attorneys that go as prosecutors, they're determined at all costs to get themselves an indictment. And lots of bad indictments have gone by because attorneys, after all, they will get their ham sandwich. A sick joke, but a joke nevertheless, that they use around themselves, that they can indict a ham sandwich. They will get their indictment. And many times these things, indictments should not have been followed through with. And a lot of times people are charged with crimes that are not crimes at all. A matter of fact, in our county jails alone, 80% or more, and I would believe more, maybe 90% of the people in jail are there unlawfully. They broke no law. They came upon the people with statutes that have nothing to do with the people. In order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And the government, in a sense, cannot be that injured party. As a whole, the people can be an injured party, but the government itself cannot be the injured party. And the people need to understand this. But here's the people's duty. Underneath the people's duty, people should read through this and just get some basic information of what we're doing. But it's the organizing. We'll jump down first to find your county committees of safety. Right now, we're just starting to organize that page. But we're going to just briefly go through it. Carl is working on making the connection that people will be able to go up into my account. You could see it right here, right under people's duty. There's a tab right here that says My Account. And when you click on My Account, the information that you put into into the form when you joined NLA, you have the ability to change that, update that information, or whatever you want to do with it. But you're going to find a tab in there, and I believe it's going to say, and we'll send an email out as soon as this happens. I believe it's going to say something like, it's going to say the Committee of Safety, the COS, we'll call it the COS, which is the Committee of Safety. Something like start a Committee of Safety or form a Committee of Safety. We'll probably write a paragraph or something and a place to click. And when you click on that, then at that point, your name and your phone number, your state, county, name, and phone number will go onto a page. Let me show you how that'll look. After you read through this page is really the entrance page to find your county committees of safety. You'll come down and click on your state. I'll click on New York because that's the state I live in. Now, on this page, you will see in New York, we have 622 members here in New York State. We have 62 counties. And we have constituted all 62 counties. Constituted means that we have visited the county, brought forth the ideas of what we're doing, particularly to bring back common law grand juries was the big focus, and to get the people's approval and to go forward. And it was really almost unanimous every time. Once in a while, we got a troublemaker in there or someone who just didn't understand what was going on. But generally speaking, we were welcomed, of course, that we should do this. And so we wanted to introduce ourselves in each of the counties. So many people were involved in this project over quite a few years in order to visit all 3,134 counties. There are certain counties that not many people live in, so we didn't necessarily visit them. But we did invite maybe whoever lived in those counties that they can come to the county next door where it's more populous and join in and give their consent and thoughts and get involved. So generally speaking, we were very successful in organizing going through that process. Now on this page, you'll see download all members. The only people that can download all the members are the people who have signed up to become an organizer of the county or committee of safety organizer. Again, we may change those wordings. We're working on that. Right now it says county organizer, and it may be county organizers to organize the committee of safety or the COS or something like that. But anyway, and again, if I'm moving too fast, and I am going to cover a lot of stuff, remember, we have this audio up there, and by next week we should have the video up there so we can go through the video and see what I'm looking at in the browser as I'm talking. But anyway, so you can click on that, download all members, and a Microsoft Excel will open. You'll say okay to that, and you'll be able to get contact information on all the people within the county. I don't know why it's not opening, but there it is. Okay. So basically, we just have names, phone numbers, the county. We're going to remove addresses, and there's some other information we don't necessarily need. The important thing is that the people, what county the person is living in, already you're in the right state, New York, but what county the person is living in, what their first name is what we only need, and their phone number. So that this way, the people organizing the counties can make phone calls to the people who are NLA members and invite them down to help in the building of the committees of safety on the county levels. Also, we have a message board here. This is being used by some people. People can use it. They have some conversation. They share some things. Here, someone shared something on land patent, or maybe they're looking for help on land patent, and then people will answer and have some good conversations there. So people can communicate there, too, if they want to. Okay. And we also have some information on finding lore. This should focus in particularly on lore in your state. And on the federal level, we have that somewhere else. But anyway, giving you some assistance on the lore in your state. But remember, you know, statutes do not apply to the people. Never, ever, cannot ever. Because how can the master have authority over, I mean, how can the servant have authority over the master? The problem is, in America, the servants have become the master. And they've stolen our house. They've seized control of our house. And we can't get it back. We need help to get it back. And, of course, thankfully, we have Donald Trump, who is not finished. He's going to finish his plan and give back to the people, as he promised, America, and reinstate our Constitution. Okay, so anyway, this is basically the page you come to. Now, on this page, county organizers, we are going to purge this page. Okay, so there's a lot of names and numbers up here. Some people forgot that they've even joined us. Some people aren't necessarily active. Maybe you have some wrong phone numbers in here, whatever the case may be. So we're purging these pages, so there'll be nobody on the page. And then people were hoping that people will, by next week, start putting up their names by clicking the box in underneath, again, let me go up here and show, underneath my account, again, there'll be a box that you can click. Or maybe we could make it simpler. I'll talk to Carl to see if we could just put it on this line. Build the committee of safety, organize committee of safety, or organizer as committee of safety, something like that. Well, you'll click it, and it'll automatically put your state. It'll find your state, find your county, put your first name and your phone number in there. So people who are coming in to look to join committees of safety, get involved in the committee man process, and get involved in the jury process. You know, they can connect with the people in their county. Again, our motto, so to speak, is, the people must increase and National Liberty Alliance must decrease. Although we are taking a lot of authority, we're writing papers, we're leading people in the right way, we're training people, we're educating people, we're helping people to organize their counties and bring together all the things they need. And as soon as they feel that they can step up on their own feet and start to do these things on their own, then, of course, they're free to do that because we are all free and independent. And only the people on the grassroots level, from their experience, from within their counties, see the things that they need to fix or address with their government, whether it be federal, state, county, town, city, whatever. Okay? But first, we need to teach people the processes of many things, and the different people will be doing different things. Not one person has to know all these things. But hopefully maybe one or two people in each county will be able to master an understanding of all these things so that they can really help to really move their county forward with the power and the authority of the people. So anyway, this is where you will find your county organizers. You could be more than one putting a name up here, but if someone's got their name up here already, and you want to put your name up here in your county, and there's a person in the county, make sure you contact that person. Let them know, hey, I put my name and number up there also as a contact. When are we meeting? Now, every single committee of safety in every county will develop a meetup group on the website called Meetup. We'll cover that in a few minutes. But here under People's Duty is, again, where you find everything you need to know. So, we have Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. Let me just cover that real quickly. This campaign really is trying to educate all of our sheriffs. We're asking people to buy a book. The book is Government by Consent. It was a book that I had written. I'm not sure how many pages. It's hopefully coming out soon. I'm working with my editor right now. I finished going through the editing of the book. Now they're perfecting it and they're formatting it now. As soon as they finish formatting it, they'll send it back to me. I'll go through it to make sure I'm happy with the formatting, take it a final look over to make sure I'm comfortable and happy with what we got put together. Then we send it back to them for print. And we're hoping to shoot towards the end of January, but we'll see what'll happen. Maybe we'll end up in February, but we're pushing as fast as we can. We had really the hope that we could have gotten this out by November or December. We started, I forget what month we started pushing this, September, maybe September, I don't remember. But we were hoping to get it out by November. That didn't happen. A lot of things took place, and mostly my misunderstanding or not understanding of all of the processes involved in this. So it's been a very eye-opening process for me, educational. And interesting. But in any event, we like to get these books into the hands of all of our sheriffs. So we're asking people to buy their sheriff a book. And you come down here and you can click a form, you can print the order form up to order a book. You can order a book for yourself and your sheriff. We only need the county or the sheriff, because we want to make sure that the sheriff that's in office actually gets it. If we send it in the name of a sheriff and he's left office or she's left office, then that's going to follow them. But we want whoever's in office to get that book, number one. Number two, we're working with sheriffs. And there is a sheriff working with us that's been working with other sheriffs, that's organizing sheriffs, educating their sheriffs, sending them here to get educated, and really pushing them to become constitutional sheriffs. That sheriff and the group is going to write a letter to these sheriffs. So any sheriff that we send a book to, they're going to get a letter with that book introducing National Liberty Alliance and their association that they've put together. They are sheriffs, and talk a little bit about the book, you know, one-page letter and so on. So this should give it some credibility. The fact that it's in a book, people think that's credibility, and that is true, you know. And our book is filled with sources. We say nothing without proof. Everything we say has proof. So we have lots of sources. Anybody who was looking at the paper we just read, at the bottom we have footnotes or we have endnotes, and we have lots of them. So we show proof of everything that we say. We have an authority, a source. Okay, so anyway, that's the sheriff's. Again, people need to be involved in this particular project. Let's get our sheriffs educated. If our sheriffs don't know the Constitution, well, who's going to be the authority? It may get to the point we have to deal with the militia, but that should never have to happen. The sheriff should be able to fix this problem. Okay, under this People's tab, again, now organizing your county, that's probably the most important tab at this point, and it covers a lot of different things. Okay, and I'm going to try to move through this quickly. I don't want to get too lost on it, but we give you a structure of how to organize the county. I'll read just a sentence or two here and a sentence or two there. Organizing begins with one person taking the initiative to get things going by finding one other person, and then another and another until you have four people willing to hold or temporarily hold the following executive positions, thereby creating a committee of safety in your county. Now, again, you can go up here, take the responsibility in my account above, and click the box, become a county organizer to start a COS. And again, we're not sure. I'll send an email out when that is available, and we'll change this wording accordingly. But anyway, you want to kind of form together as a regular committee. And the chairman, there are also some rules and things that we put together. And the chairman does not get his carte blanche like they do everywhere else. The chairman is just like anyone else. They just maintain order and keep things moving along. They cannot and should not prevent anything from coming to the floor, ever. At any given time, if people by popular vote wants to get rid of the sheriff, the chairman, all they have to do is make a motion, take a vote, and then vote someone else in. But a chairmanship really position on the committees of safety should be just shared as time to time. They should change. Certain positions, maybe the secretary, you know, is an important point, and someone should have some secretarial background, hopefully. But if not, you know, we do what we can. But certain people might be more apt to be able to fill these positions better than others. We give venue ideas, you know, town halls, libraries, private clubs. There's also a lot of places, a lot of liberty groups within your county. We give some ideas on where you can find those liberty groups and how you can find them. You can find them through Meetup and various other ways, and invite them to your meeting, or go out and give a presentation to them and then invite them to your meeting. You know, there's a couple of ways, and we've got lots of tools that we've given people in order to do these things. Okay, but But anyway, we also have an online menu. I mean, a venue, and that's at meetup.com. And basically, people should be creating their meetup like such. You go to meetup.com, and we give all the information right in here. There's 6 steps to go through to sign up and put together a meetup group. And it's a great thing for the county because you'll set your meetings. It'll be automatically go out, reminders every month or however often you have your meetings. Different things. You'll have a place where you can share files, communicate, put pictures up. You have a place where you can come together and have conversation. It's really a very rich site. It's got a lot of stuff, a lot of tools to it. But we suggest that everybody name their meetup in accordance to the way everyone else is doing it. So it would be meetup.com, NY for your state, whatever your state is, mine is New York, Dutchess County or whatever your county is, Orange County, Ulster County, Greene County, whatever your county is. So it would be your state, your county, Committee of Safety. And that should be the name so that everyone will know when they join up, because we'll make notes of this in various places, that they can go right to the meetup group, sign up, and get involved in the county and get all the information and messages that are sent out by the leadership of the Committees of Safety. Anyway, going through this kind of quickly, we have ideas on the first meeting. Meeting protocol, again, people need to go through this. Subject matters to be discussed and focused in at your meetings. Of course, you can put a lot of subjects in here, but there are a lot of important subjects we got to focus in on, like what is the committee man? What is the jury administration? What is common law? What is equity? What are the job of the grand jury and the trial jury and the administrations thereof? What about the militia? We need to reorganize the militia. That happens through the Committee of Safety. We also did a course on the Committee of Safety, by the way. We got up here under courses. We have a free civics course. We have a militia course, Freeland Militia course. And we have the Government by Consent course. Now, the Government by Consent course, we require people to be a premier member. And a premier member is someone who's given us $5 a month or more. It's not a lot of money. It's one cup of coffee and a bagel a month. Give it up, and that's what it costs. You get a lot for it, a great education. Plus, we have lots and lots of more education. We have higher educations, too, under our educational tabs. Now, anyway, the Committees of Safety organization, we've got PDF documents, you know, a case for NLA tort COS, a COS charter, that's a very important one. Each county has to create a charter. And these, some of this paperwork that you're putting together to actually come, you're going to get a seal, you're going to make a charter, you're going to come up with certain ideas and thought. You're going to put together, and we'll work that out on how you might put it together in kind of a booklet form, where then when you go to invite your sheriff to the meeting, you give him a copy of your charter and different things. So he understands what you're all about, what we're doing, and when he comes or she comes, then they'll have a good idea and able to participate. We'd like to have our sheriffs come to us from time to time and talk to us, you know, have a Q&A with a sheriff in your county. Whatever it is you want to do. But anyway, you can go through this charter, and of course, being free and independent people, you can make changes to it. We strongly suggest to stay with the structure at hand so that every county across America is structured the same way. And of course, you know, you have different things that are necessary to focus in on more in your county and maybe not necessarily in another county. So you work all that out. That's between the people at the grassroots level to figure that stuff out. So that's one thing. We have a handbook, a Committee of Safety handbook. This is 106 pages. It talks about the Committee of Safety structure. It's got a lot of stuff in it. And again, over time, and it pulls together a lot of things that you're going to find that is put together on single documents. For instance, here is the charter, same charter that we just looked at, but it's got everything in the handbook, so you can print out the handbook and go through it, and those people that really want to get involved in the organizing of this and really master and understand what it is that you're doing, you know, they would be able to work with that handbook. We have a Committee of Safety National Disaster Plan, okay, And again, this is for a national emergency, the processes, the procedures, what we're expecting of our sheriff, what we're expecting of local government, how to relate to local government, what we're expecting with our military and our militia particularly, and the military if necessary, what we expect of them. We cover a lot of stuff in this stuff. It may not be in detail in this particular form, but it is in other places in some of these forms we're looking at. So we have lots and lots of information. The COS organization, how it's organized, and basically meeting once a month is suggested. We suggest maybe dues. But people, you could do donations, whatever you want to do. But when you come together on a county level, you should pass the can around if you're going to do donations, as everybody's introducing themselves to each other. But if you go to dues, that may be the best way, where you charge $5, I think $10 a month is good, and people can pay for the whole year or half a year or pay monthly, however they want to do it. That can be worked out, by the way, up on the meetup.com. You can require dues for this process. So you people have to figure that out on the grassroots level, what you want to do, because you do have to have some money to be able to pay for necessary materials you might want to have, or if you're going to have some kind of a function going, you've got some monies pulled together for that function, whatever it may be, going out to the public and so on. But anyway, meetings, we have educational videos that you'll play at the meetings and then discuss it and so on and so forth. Send people here to National Liberty Alliance for the higher education and to take the course on government by consent. Bringing together, of course, the committeemen. What do the committeemen do? I'd like to read through some of this because this is extremely important. We need people to become committeemen in their counties, in their towns, okay, in their election district is what it is. There's one committeeman for every election district, okay, in each of the two parties. Other parties have committeemen too, but they have no power or clout of any kind. Really on how things work, because we just have a two-party system, which we are making a case that we need to get rid of the two-party system. But that's a conversation, and maybe next week or the week after we'll look at that. But what do committeemen do, okay? Committeemen interview the candidates for election and fill the political vacancies with statesmen that know the law of the land and remind them to observe it. So we get to choose who gets onto the ballot. We get to give them the test. What you need to know the Constitution so that you can ask them questions on the Constitution. And if they don't know the Constitution, send them to the National Liberty Alliance, have them get an education on government by consent. Then they can come back and you'll interview them again and say, okay, now remember the Constitution. Because when you get up there, you start breaking your oath. We're going to let you know real quick. And if you don't fix those problems, or anyone you appoint, you don't fix those problems real quick, we're just going to pull you out of office by recall. The committeemen can recall anyone out of office. That's political power. That's government by consent. The ballot box is nice, but that's not really government by consent. Government by consent is when the people decide who goes onto the ballot, and the people decide when they break their oath that they either fix the problem or we have the ability to take them out of office. And we could do that within 90 days and have a new individual going up for election. Simple as that. There is a process. We'll teach that process. Committeemen decide who gets onto the ballot. Committeemen observes and certifies the vote counting. If we had elected committeemen, and we do not have elected committeemen in the United States, nowhere. It's a private corporation, a private organization. It's part of the New World Order. So they're all corporate bodies. They are not elected by the people at all. They're not free to vote the way they want to. It's a top-down rule. This elected committeeman is bottom-up. We get to discuss everything in our counties, in our towns, in each one of our election districts that affect us, whether it be in the senatorial or district, the Senate district, or if it's in the Assembly district, or in the U.S. Congressional district, or maybe it's in a town district, who's running for certain offices in a town or village. You see, whatever affects you as a committeeman in your election district, you get a say about this and how things work. We, as the committeemen, we can impose a lot upon them. We can impose, a limited time. Maybe we only want people to have an office two terms in a row, and that's it. You're out. We want next person. See, we don't want people living in Congress or in the Senate, and the Senate needs to go back to the states anyway. The 17th Amendment is null and void because it's unlawful, but that's another conversation. But, you know, you get to decide, these people, how long they're going to be in office and when to take them out and when to put new people in and who to put in and put in statesmen and make sure they're doing their job, which is restricted by the authority we gave them in our documents, particularly the Constitution, whether it be the U.S. Constitution or the state Constitution. But we would not have the problem with the elections that we have today. They wouldn't exist because we, the committee men, control it all. The people need to control it. The committee men observes and certifies vote counting. They monitor and report on elected individuals to ensure they don't overstep their authority. They monitor and report the hand counting of the vote in public for both primary and general elections. Committee men can recall elected individuals who do not honor their oath. Committee men can end the two-party system. And if you want to read more about that, right here, this link, you can click on the link. It's a clickable link. Nope, you can cut and paste it, though. If you go to this page, it's a PDF. If I can get it on there. Nope, can't get it in. Oh, there it goes. Come on, why do you want to go all the way? Let me try that. Yes, I think that's it. Oh, no. Okay, I didn't get it all in there. But in any event, you go to that page, and it's on a PowerPoint transcripts. Page where you saw it was under, right here under education and PowerPoint videos, NLA topics, you'll find it there. We make a really good case. Actually, our founding fathers make a really good case on why we should not have a two-party system. Extremely important to understand this. You know, you got to remember back in the day when they were bringing things together, there was the big difference between what people who wanted to create a national government and people who didn't want to. Jefferson was one who wanted to, but he was concerned about them having too much power and wanted to have minimum power. And we ended up with the one with minimum power. Okay, but they have really gone far beyond their authorities and their jurisdictions, and we need to set them back and put them back down under the chains of the Constitution. Okay, we have a copy of the committee man seal, the Committee of Safety seal. This is it here. You put your county up there, Committee of Safety seal. We suggest 1776 AD in the beginning. That's, the Declaration of Independence, and, of course, your state. We lay out how you can get it, where you can get it. I think this is through Staples right here. You can order your seals. But every Committee of Safety should have a seal. I'm not going to go through all this. We have different flyers. We have a national disaster of PDF, an organized PDF. We also have Robert's Rules of Orders in here. And we have the Sheriff's Handbook here. And excerpts from a couple of different U.S. cases, Marbury versus Madison, U.S. versus Williams. We have the vow that everyone should take, okay, coming into the Committee of Safety, coming into the committee man, coming into the administrations for the juries, and even the juries themselves should take this vow. And basically it says, I vow to the governor of the universe in my capacity as a member of the Committee of Safety, in this case, to serve, protect, and uphold the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights, and to carry out all of my duties to serve the communities, principled under justice, honor, and mercy. So that's the vow. And everybody needs to take that vow. Anybody who doesn't want to take that vow, well, maybe we don't want them being with us. I don't know, because we're doing some serious things, and we have to be very careful that we come with a sense of justice, honor, and mercy. So let's see. Let me go to another page. There's lots of stuff here. Download PowerPoint videos for the county meeting. There's lots of them here, a lot of duplicates from what's on the educational page on that. Now back under here, we have, if you haven't registered to vote, you should register to vote. Now I know there's a movement to try to create another party. I think that's a big mistake. people can do whatever they want, but we'll be working to take out parties because parties are the problem. And again, our founding fathers make the case in that paper I referred to. They will make the case for you, for us, and they are clear. Jefferson, even though he is, you know, he was anti-federalist, they kind of got that name, but never was meant to be. The point is that they wanted to get, you know, groups of people that were trying to do this or that, and they were trying to get it accomplished. But once we accomplished and came together as a nation and we agreed about the Constitution, what need of a political party do we have? Why do we need a political party? There's no necessity for it at all. Because we have a Constitution. We have a natural law Constitution. We are the only republic under natural law. You know, Russia's a republic, China's a republic, Iran and Iraq are republics, many other places are republics, but they're not natural law republics. We're a natural law republic. That means that we're not governed by men, we're governed by God ultimately, and the people govern the government. That's what we have. And with that kind of a government, and we've laid out what their job is, what their authorities are, and what their jurisdictions are, what need do they have to get up and argue and debate whether the Second Amendment should be require permits or whether the Second Amendment should be removed and freedom of speech? Look, that's all set in stone, done with, move on. Okay? So it's the people, really, that should be making the decisions, and the states also that focus in to make the decisions whether something needs to be added to the Constitution or not. But generally, before we want to add anything more to the Constitution, I think we first have to start exercising what we first have already and then think if we're going to need something later. For without that education of exercising it, how can we know if we're lacking or not? So back to the people's, under the people's duty. Become a committeeman. This page here will give you all the information. It tells you about the committeeman to become a committeeman. Teaches you how to fill out a designating petition. How to sign up to become a committeeman. And, you know, these are all the counties in the United States, 3,134 of them. We have a couple of videos in here and information about the committeeman and so on and so forth. Okay. The next page under here is committeeman petition process, okay, which is a video teaching people how to fill out the petition, how to become a committeeman. Talks more about the powers and the authorities of the committeeman, but it's mostly focused on how to become a committeeman. So these are 10 minutes apiece. There are six of them, so it's a 60-minute video ultimately. They just play automatically one after another. We have a download the written petition process. We have this also written down as well as in the video. We also have it written down. Here's the petition process, okay, that we've written up on this. And then we have more information on that. Let's see. Download a Democrat designating petition or Republican designating petition. Ultimately the same thing. The only thing is just change the word, whether it's Democrat or Republican. That's all. We offer this in PDF, but we also have them in Word, and we have one that's kind of neutral, just fill it in, but just we make notes on it, make sure you fill out what party you're in. But people who are going to run for committeeman, they need to go through this and understand. We go through the dates for filing it and different information, what needs to be on this and so on. Committeeman proposed party rules. This is very important. We've already passed these rules here in New York back in 2013. We came together, Republicans and Democrats, on a national convention, on a statewide convention in Kingston, New York, and we spend the entire day hammering out the new party rules that empower the people and not the party. Therein is the difference, because the party rules existing today empowers the party. The party rules that we wrote and initiated in 2013 empowers the people. And you can read through this. You can click and download a copy right here of the party rules that we put together. You put your state, whether it's Republican or Democrat. And again, the end result is to get rid of parties. We definitely have to do that. And there is a process, and we need to talk more about this. We need to spend maybe a Monday talking about this. But this needs, really, when you come together as Republicans and Democrats for the sole purpose of upholding the Constitution, you're going to get a lot of work done. But even if you don't come together as that, you come together as who you are. The only way we're going to be able to get rid of the Republican and Democratic incorporated parties, they are fictions of law, they are corporations, and those corporations are owned by somebody, okay, certainly not the people. The only way we're going to get rid of them is to come in and take it over in the place where we get elected, and we can have them a cease and desist order from using that name in our county or in our state. Because they have to go away. The people have to step up. Okay. Anyway, you could read through this. Hopefully people will really initiate all the rules that we put together. They may change it a little bit. They may add to it. Maybe they'll delete a few things, but I strongly suggest not deleting it. We try to really focus it just to powering the people. And if you read through it very carefully, I think you'll see it powers the people. Adding to it is an absolute. You're going to want to add to it, but you don't want to add anything that's going to be restricted, people. But again, these kind of things take place once you become committeemen and you start organizing. At that point, you'll be a lot more educated in the process by going through all of the information that we have up here on our website. Okay, now the next thing is the Republic Review. We're working with GR, and he is working through the Republic Review, which really, to put it in a nutshell, is we're moving, trying to move the states to come together in a Republic Review to review the legislation that we already have and the different agencies, particularly on the federal level, the agencies that have been created on the federal level, and look for their constitutionality, and then remove anything that they didn't have the constitutional authority to do. That's what the Republic Review is actually all about. We, the people, need to support that movement and support the individuals that will be really talking with the state legislators and finding someone within the state legislations that would agree with us and start spearheading it and moving it towards that direction. But we have to move the states in this direction. And now is the great time to start organizing for that, because once Trump finishes cleaning up things, we will have a clean slate to really, really jump into a window of opportunity that we'll never have again to do all these things we're talking about, okay? And we must do them all under the Committee of Safety. You know, again, some people will become committeemen. Everyone should be part of the militia, because that's the way that is. You're born, you're part of the militia, period. Everyone should support the committeemen, and everyone should consider being a committeeman once in their life. It's a two-year process, and it requires about 40 hours a year, not a lot of time, so about 40 hours a year of your time, and it's always around the elections, and your job really is, once organized, your job really is interviewing people to put them on the ballot. What a great job that is, huh? Being the decider who goes on that ballot, saying, no, this guy, forget about it. I'll tell you why he shouldn't be in this position. And you bring it out to the other committeemen, you talk about it, you debate it, and then you come to conclusions, and you walk the papers for the people that you want to get into the power, you know? So, again, Republic Review, the Committees of Safety should support it. And every state should have a couple of people that are working, that would like to take on that position, to work to bring this to the attention of the state legislators to convince them to get involved in this. Okay, back under the people's duty again. Party rules, public review, the county militia, okay. We have a plan on the county militia, structuring the county militia. We also have a course on it, as I mentioned before, up here, the free militia course. And we have a lot of different information on this page and different PDFs that you can open up and use and for information. But we laid out a plan and a process that we want to structure all of the militias, the basic rules or laws of common law that governs the militia. So we've laid that out. Brent Winters, who's with us, he's an author of the book, The Excellence of the Common Law, but he also wrote a handbook on the militia of the several states. And you can get a copy of that handbook if you want. You should find it on this page somewhere. But on the right-hand side of our website, on every page, pretty much, if you scroll down, there it is. Here's the booklet, The Militia of the Several States. It's a pocket handbook. Everyone should get one. If you click on the link, you can go to Brent Winter's site, who wrote this book, and you can purchase it for a minimum amount. Okay, let's see. Here are the rules of the several states for the militia. Extremely important that we follow through these rules. You know, we work together here at National Liberty Alliance with Brent Winters, who's been working with us for quite some time now, usually teaches every Monday. And so we hammered together plan, which is for the militia for the several states, basically, you know, a structure for them. I guess you would also call it, what's the word I'm looking for? It would be a, let me go real quick over here. County, courtroom, no, wrong one. Okay. All right, I can't think of the word, but in any event, you have to, you know, put together a paper which really defines what it is you're doing, what the authorities is, what the restrictions are, sort of the ground rules, so to speak. Okay, and most of this stuff was put together by Brent Winters, and we assisted him in really mostly in structure and form of just placing it on paper. But it's his book that he had written, did a lot of research in it in order to accomplish that. Okay, back under the people's duty. Militia rules for the several states. Becoming a jury administrator, okay? Here, becoming a jury administrator, anybody who's interested in this, we're looking for 5 people in each county, 4 administrators, and we're looking for 1 paralegal secretary, okay? So 5 people each county. And the paralegal secretary can also be an administrator. They have the job that they have to do, but they can also act as an administrator also, dealing with the juries, to orientate the juries, to make sure we protect the juries and prevent them from, again, from being polluted by the judge or some attorney, and particularly prosecutors, and so on. But it is a paid position. It's a career position, a very rewarding position. So we need 4 people in every 5 people in every county. And in order to become a jury administrator, read through this page, we lay it out. You need to take all of our courses. We're writing a handbook for administrators, jury administrators, and also we'll always be here to respond to questions or things that we haven't covered in the book or in this information, or something comes up that we just haven't covered. If we don't have the answer, we'll research it out and get it out there and make sure everybody knows whatever it is that we discovered. But again, it's up to the people to run these things on their own, in their own counties. We are just facilitating the abilities, the education, everything necessary to do this. Okay? And final, but last but not least, is the county sheriff. Okay? And this basically is focusing in on the county sheriff. We've written a book, a handbook for the sheriff. You can download a copy of that in PDF form. And again, we're asking people to donate to Save Our Republic, to NLA's campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Buy your sheriff a book. Educate him. And it's sent by other sheriffs, so it's endorsed by other sheriffs to say, hey, look at this book. And as they read through it, they will know this is truth, and they will know this is the law, because we give the sources. It goes right back to the creation of this nation, to the Federalist Papers, the comments of our family founding fathers, the common law. Very rich amount of information in all this stuff. Okay, so that kind of covers everything. And again, it is extremely important that everybody that's hearing my voice right now, as soon as I send out an email, we'll be sending out an email when we're up and operating in order to sign up as an organizer. I've already done that. I'm just waiting for the page to come up, and my name will appear with a phone number that you can reach me at, and then we will, you know, anybody in my county, can contact me, and we can start getting together. Now, we already have a lot of people because I've been involved in the Patriot movement for 20 years now here, and very, very heavily since 2008 with the Ron Paul movement. But I was involved with We the People back in 1999 is when I found We the People and connected with them either in 99 or 2000. And so I know a lot of organizations. We have been, Gerard and I have visited almost every county in New York, so we know all the committee groups, you know, the different groups that are out there, the Liberty groups, shall I call them. But we want to turn them all into Committee of Safety groups, which will continue the work that they're doing, but add a lot more to it and give them power and authority to take back their country, their nation, their state, their county, their city, village, whatever, from the grassroots level. Okay, so that's kind of an introduction. I know it took a while to do that, but I really wanted to do something like this to lay all that out, talk about the power and the authority of the people, where we get authority and power from, and then lay out all of the things we're doing. And so again, it's focusing in, we are the authors of the law, okay? We wrote the Constitution. We want to make sure they obey it. We need to be the committee men, decide who gets onto the ballot, and get rid of the bad apples that don't obey their oaths. We want to control the jurists, both the grand jury and the petit jury, through administrations who take an oath to act with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, protect them, make sure they're oriented correctly, make sure they understand the basics of common law and the fact that they get to decide if a law is fair or not. Any law, if it can apply within a court case, if this court case includes an individual working for the government or involved in a commercial activity that we gave them authority to write regulations for or statutes or codes for, then they apply to that person. But if we feel that, hey, in this case it doesn't apply to that person, or it's unconstitutional, or we just don't like it, not in this case, you nullify it. It may not be nullified in another case, but it may be nullified in this case. You know, it's up to you, are the lawmakers, ultimately. Under God's law, we are the lawmakers. We control the actions of our government. We, the people, decide innocent or guilt in a criminal court case. We, the people, get to decide what's the restitution. We're not interested necessarily in putting people in jail, unless they have to be put in jail if they're violent. But we're not interested in that. We're interested in restoring the injured party. And the person who injured that party is the person that should store it. Right now, the way the system is, they may fine you $1,000 or $10,000 or $100,000. Well, who gets that money? Well, the state gets that money. Why should they get that money? No, the injured party, maybe. That's what we have to focus on. We're not interested in fines. We're interested in the state, in the people who are injured. If it's a commercial activity or something, maybe there's something people can think about and work out, but in a fine or whatever. But we're looking for justice. We're looking to fix the problem and make sure it doesn't happen again. Okay, with that, we're going to go and open up to an open conversation, questions. Anybody has any questions or comments? Star 6 or 1 to get into the queue. We have a few people in the queue right now. I saw Brent was here. If someone can find him and unmute him. Brent, we're not going to be going into, we're going to stay focused on the subject matter tonight, but we'll unmute you and feel free to comment on anything that's going on, any conversations that have taken place. Okay, with that, we'll take our first question. Gerard, are you here? Calling Gerard. All right, while I'm waiting for Gerard, I'll go forward and take the first person with questions. Let's see. First person was Blanchard, 808 area code.
Yeah, Eli. Hello.
How you doing, Eli?
Hey, good, good. So I've been thinking that having a hard time turning this into a question. Okay, so my best understanding of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence with regard to the Second Amendment says that when the government is no longer like doing its six functions, like establishing justice, securing the borders, ensuring domestic tranquility, and so forth, when it's no longer doing that, it becomes the right and the duty of the people to overthrow or abolish or reform or something like that.
Correct.
I would like to have the conversation or the, like, is there something we can put our finger on that tells us when it's right and lawful and correct? When is it the correct action to bear arms to reform the government?
Well, look at, we are coming very close to that. We cannot allow the, look at, the takeover in the United States right now is being ultimately backed and done ultimately by the using the communist Chinese Party, and they've got a lot of holds on a lot of things in America, a lot of corporations, a lot of congressmen, a lot of senators, and people throughout our government, and it's a communist movement. And if anybody wants to see, you know, this is let me go to real quickly here. Anybody wants to see what the future of a communist party has for us? Right here on our front page, looks like they took this video. Guy just posted this video up today. This is a shame. This was a nice video. But anyway,
some of the ones with the interview of the girl in North
right.
Korea.
That's what's heading for America. Can we allow that? No. When they start attacking our Second Amendment and our First Amendment, then what have they been doing? They've been silencing us everywhere. They're showing their colors, who they are, right now.
Right.
They are taking 100%. We can't permit that. Now, I don't think we have to worry at this point in time because Trump's not finished. And so we're waiting on him to see what he's going to do.
Whether or not we're worrying about it or whether or not, you know, what's happening and all that kind of stuff, I would just like to be clear to be able to have somewhere to have the conversation of what is the line that needs to be crossed? What is our cue to bear arms? At what point is it correct? What is the when is it the correct action to do?
Let me read this, and it's coming close. Look, the New World Order has been moving in on us, eating away of our liberties. What Trump has done is he's forced it to a head. They had planned, of course, the last election to have won that, and they had a 12-year plan that at some point, they would move us right into a communist focus and there'd be no more presidents. But because Trump won and started foiling everything they've done, turning a lot of things around, they're moving now. It's hardcore. There's no more time for them to wait. It's hit and take. So we have to wait to see what Trump does, and then we'd have to think out what we may have to do after that. But in the Declaration of Independence, we read right here, it's in part of the preamble, but when a long train of abuses and usurpations, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, when we're coming under, and we are very close, under absolute despotism, so it's very close.
Right, but it's not saying
it is the right, let me just finish this, let me just finish this, let me just finish this. It is the right, it is their duty, let me say that again, it is your right and duty, okay, to throw off such government and to provide new gods for the future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies and also of us, we the people, over the years. We've been telling these people stop for a long time, and they just continue. Now, the problem is the people aren't educated enough to understand their powers and authorities. They need to read things like this. They need to understand this. That we're not developed on, this is why we're trying to get the committees of safety. The committees of safety organized the fighting of the Revolutionary War. They organized it all and voted everything in place. And so we have to push forward towards the committees of safety in each county. And each county, the committees of safety, will be working on the committeemen, working on taking back the judicial processes with the administration for the juries, working with rebuilding the militias, both the organized and the unorganized. There is a plan to build those who are real serious to assist them to get them to a level. And when we reach a certain number in a certain area of a certain state, then they become the organized militia, which then could be handed over for access for the governor or the president to be able to call upon. And it's their duty to then, of course, provide a lot of different things for that service. Okay. And so, but if we were organized, if we had sheriffs that understood the Constitution, if we were organized in most counties with militias and taking the authorities and having the committee man, we'd have no problem dealing with this problem.
No, nobody wants to take the first shot, but this question right. needs to be couched differently. When is it proper for you to use deadly force if you have a gun or you're a concealed carry holder? It happens every day. And sometimes it even happens with law enforcement. So you have to make right. that decision at your door. Different. Look, if they're yeah. next door and they kill your neighbors, you don't have to think very hard then, do you?
Isn't that a different purpose, though? Like, the Second Amendment is given, yes, so we can have arms, so we can go hunting for home protection, etc. However, the main purpose of the Second Amendment is so that we can reform our government. It's not like we're waiting for them to come break down our door.
I understand that, but look at what is under the law when are you justified to use deadly force in order to save your life, liberty, and property? It's simple as that. Right. So if you have a law enforcement officer who is hell-bent on doing an unconstitutional act and violating your rights, you basically have the right to shoot them. There are states that have upheld people shooting officers coming into their place with no warrants and illegals. People have killed officers and gotten away with it. It doesn't happen very much, but it has happened.
And probably a while ago, too.
Look, they cross that line all the time. You know, you always have to ask yourself, and they're not going to let you go. You shoot a police officer, now you're going to have to defend yourself in court, and if they don't kill you right on the spot, you know.
Also, if you're building a committee of safety, okay, remember, you're working with the sheriff, and the sheriff has the power and authority of posse comitatus, and that's where the unorganized militia, which is everyone involved, okay, can be called to a certain place for a certain purpose to defend whatever it is that the sheriff sees as a violation to be defended. I know I spoke with my sheriff, and they're trying to do things with weapons here in New York. They have the SAFE Act and all this stuff. They wanted to take control of the permits for guns, and the sheriffs got together in New York State. I think only one or two of them didn't participate, but other than that, it was all of them, 60 of them. And they told the governor, you're not getting all of the information on who has, we're going to handle it because that's our job. So they refused to give it to the governor, and the governor couldn't do nothing about it. The other thing is, if they were to stop me and try to take my weapon or whatever, violate me in any way, my sheriff said, "You just give me a call and I'll be there. One of my deputies will be there and we'll handle it." And we've seen them in action here in New York on a couple of occasions where they defended the people. We had a situation up north. Maybe Gerard knows more about this. I wasn't up there. I don't know if Gerard, you were there. When they were doing a rally or something on one side of the lake and the governor was doing something on the other side of the lake, he called the state police to have all of us removed. I wasn't there, though. Or have the liberty groups removed. And they were putting up barriers. Someone called the sheriff, and the sheriff came out, kicked the cops down, and cops out, and kicked down all of the barriers, and told the people, "Enjoy." Okay, there's a sheriff that understood Constitution. Yeah. Okay, so we have to create our sheriffs to become constitutionalists. It's our job to educate them and work with them. Go ahead.
There's certain issues where the line is more clearly drawn in the sand, and I have went and saw my sheriff. Well, now he's a new sheriff. I got to go see this new guy again. But when they said they were going to come door-to-door with vaccinations, I called my sheriff up and I said, "Listen, what are you going to do? Because I'm telling you right now, I'm going to resist with deadly force. My gun's going out the window when they're here. And when that cop is here with that nurse is going to think she's going to stick a needle in me, I'm going to shoot to kill and I'm going to call you." Yeah. And I told him ahead of time, if it comes down to mandatory stuff like that that's violating my rights, I'm telling you right now, I'm resisting with deadly force, and I'm expecting you to come and defend me. And at that time, he reluctantly said he would, would he really? He kind of like, I could see the vein in his neck jumping, as he clenched his face. But he was kind of forced to say, yes, I'll, if they're clearly violating the law like that or doing it like that. Now, that's a pretty clear line in the sand. I don't think that they're so stupid that they'll go door to door, because that's very easy for them. You know, the first people they go in and cut down, the rest of the people will get their guns, and that'll be the end of that. Because they won't go door to door. If everybody's shooting at them every time they go to the next house, that campaign is done, believe me. And they don't have that kind of resolve to take care of this statutory crap. You know what I mean? That guy's not going to put his life on the line to violate your rights. The only reason they get away with violating your rights is because their life never gets put on the line, because they got us disarmed beforehand. So, yeah. You know, to be well-regulated and well-prepared and have the gun and know that and train with it and talk to your sheriff, that's going to make your job a lot easier, and it's going to make the situation more clear where, you know, are we at war or are we not at war? Or am I just defending my family or what? But it's not always so cut and dried, is what I'm trying to say.
And there's power in numbers. That's why you must create committees of safety in your county. Look at, even if you don't know what to do, you'll learn. And it doesn't matter. You have a meeting anyway. You come together. The first order of business is one person signing up, okay? Then when you connect with one other person, two of you meet for coffee here or there and discuss some ideas, and three or four people get together, and you put all these ideas together, you figure out different groups you're going to invite. Then you start your inviting, you set up a venue and a date and a time, and you get the word out, and you have the people come to the meetings, and you build your committee of safety. And everybody will educate themselves here and there. Together, on a county level, in a committee of safety, together, all the people working together will have all the knowledge they need. One person will have knowledge in this area, another in that area, so on and so forth. Okay.
And you can head this stuff off at the door. Because if you've got a bunch of people like that and they come out with some crazy edict, you send a letter and you say, listen, I hope you don't think you're going to enforce this, because me and my community here, we're prepared to fight to the death. So if you want to come over here, I'm telling you right now, if you're going to enforce this law, we're going to resist with deadly force. You tell them up front. Yeah.
And also the sheriff, who is part of the committee of safety, because once you put things together and you show him the paperwork and he sees what you're all about and he starts to participate, well, he's there now with you. We have a problem in New York where they think they're going to put the governor's working on legislation with the legislators to try to force the inoculation, because they believe up until 90% of the people have to be inoculated in order to prevent this thing from going, so they claim. And so therefore, if they're not going to do it voluntarily, we'll put legislation and force them. Well, once they get to that point, and you talk with your sheriff, and you talk with the people in the committee, in your committee, we can send papers with the sheriff behind us, letting them know, you could do whatever you want. Don't come to this county. And you know what? Our sister county has asked us for assistance, and if you go there, we're going to help them too. Stay out of our counties, because we're not going to take it. You see, you can do that. You'd be surprised. Look what Sheriff Mack did. Sheriff Mack had a problem with the feds, and two or three sheriffs got together. And when the feds were coming down into their counties, they cut them off at the pass, so to speak, and they threw them out of town. They said, leave, don't come back. And they had a court case over this, you know, and Sheriff Mack with others won that court case. And the point was made that the sheriff is the top law enforcement agent in the county, period.
Okay, good, good. Okay, a little thing here is, how can these guys even make laws or bills, they're passing around ideas, basically, right? When it's a bill, it's not done yet. They still need to have everybody look at it. Like, at what point can you just throw them in jail for writing a bill that is so...
We can throw them out of office if we control the committeeman process and able to do a recall.
If they vote on an unconstitutional bill, you absolutely...
Can indict them, too.
That's treason. If they vote on a bill that violates your rights, you absolutely can arrest them and throw them in jail.
At least certain legislation, required inoculation.
Talking about it and voting on it are two different things.
What if they're talking about drafting a bill that says, hey, we're going to go cut the heads off anyone who's black, you know? It's just a bill. We're just passing it around. We didn't vote on it yet.
Well, of course, that's tyranny.
Well, it's still in the bill stages. They can talk about it all they want. They better not put their signature on it, though.
Well, actually, they can't. Look, they cannot talk about anything anti-constitutional in public from an office. because that's a platform to be able to bring forth power and to bring forth and to exercise their power.
That's what you call
and
subversion.
That is against the law, right?
That's
subversion. That's what they're doing right now with that.
Exactly. Look at
our conspiracy as far as that goes.
When these people get together and discuss getting rid of the Second Amendment, they should be charged and put in jail for that, because that is subversion. There are U.S. codes that talk about people who teach or preach, you know, use a soapbox to get up and preach it and to bring it forth in papers, make pamphlets on anything that subverts the Constitution. There's a term in prison for that person, according to codes.
Right. So then there we go. They're subverting the Constitution. They're doing it. It's wrong, and it's time for us to use force to change what they're doing.
But the people are not educated enough to know to do this. Look at, nobody even thinks about it, but it's so obvious. Huh?
It's like, how many people do you need? You know what
I mean? Well, you need committees of safety in every county. If you can get committees of safety in every county going and get, 50, 100 and more people as time goes on, you're going to be powerful.
Okay, so what I'm hearing then is, until you have a committee of safety, the Second Amendment is useless.
Until we have a committee of safety and we take back the political and the judicial process, they're going to do anything they want, because that's what they're doing and they're getting away with it. And the people, it's a sad, sad thing that people have to go to Washington, D.C. and beg these people to obey the law. It's very sad. And if one-tenth of these people that went to Washington were to come here at National Liberty Alliance, get an education, and start affecting the committees of safety in their county, we would have every county in America with committees of safety, and we would organize, and we would take their whole system down. We'd get rid of them all, and we wouldn't need Trump to do it for us.
Okay, all right. Well, I guess I'm appeased for now. Thank you. I'm kind of worked up about all this.
Good to be appeased.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
All righty. Gerard, you got the board here? Gerard? I will take the next caller here. Who is it? Debbie, 53. You got the mic.
Hello.
Hello, Debbie.
I this evening sent to mail at NLA my response to the federal bench that questioned their own jurisdiction in my removal. And in there, I would like, if possible, to get your assessment of it.
What are you trying to do? What's going on? Give me a small synopsis.
I removed the cases that my circuit court had against me, and then I used your forms, and I went to federal court to, in essence, sue the state's attorneys, and the federal bench sent out a notice to the court saying, wouldn't you like to challenge our jurisdiction on this? So
they asked them if they wanted to challenge the jurisdiction?
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, you know, the judges should not be participating in that, and I see it all the time. They're just to hear what's before them and decide on that. And, of course, they're to apply the law that they should know. What did you move it for? For lack of due process?
Yes, correct.
All right, well, look at whatever happens with it, let us know, and if you want, you can join it to our case, because we're taking joinders on our case, anybody, and, we'll do an amicus curiae into the court to see if we can get the judge to do the right thing, and if he refuses to do the right thing, then it'll be joined into our case and set up for justice at a later time, you know, because until we get to the other side of things, we're not going to get justice in these federal courts in most cases.
Right, but what I'm asking is if you could possibly look at my response to them and see if it is appropriate. And in that response, I cite the study that CDC did themselves, because the court mentioned COVID. So
is this a case where they refused your service because you didn't wear a mask or something?
Well, that came into it also.
because I'm doing a case on that myself, and I will post that up, you know, in a generic form so people can look at it and maybe use some of the stuff that I'm doing. Here's the problem. I'd like to say yes.
Okay. Yeah. But I want to finish. I cite the actual study CDC did wherein they themselves admit they made the virus up on a computer and that it is impossible for it to infect either human or even bats.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about on that, but I do know that there are a lot of studies that refute what it is that they're saying, and they've done the studies themselves, and they still refute
the conclusions.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, here's the problem. If I say yes and you send me a paper, then a lot of people are going to be sending me papers, and I don't have time for that. But what I can do, how many pages is it?
It's probably just one.
Okay, if you send that one page, put it to mail, M-A-I-L, at National Liberty Alliance, okay? Attach it to it. Okay, and I'll take a look at it. You know, that mail goes to a lot of people on the national level, and different people deal with different mail. But if you're addressing it to me on that, I'll take a look at that, and maybe next Monday I can comment a little on it. But meanwhile, I'm going to be writing a paper soon, and because I got a case of the same thing where I was denied service, and there are U.S. codes we can use. This is by the post office, so it's a federal building, and it's federal people who are on the federal payroll. So I'm going to be suing the people that denied me my service, and I will post the paperwork up online, and when I do that, I'll let people know on the Monday night meeting where it's at and what I got, and people can look at it and utilize some of the stuff.
Also, I would like to offer, if you feel it is appropriate, I would be willing to go through the list before you purge them and contact these people on the list and...
For the committees of safety?
Yes, and ask them to reignite their commitment per the protocol that you establish on the website.
Okay, get a hold of Francine, okay?
Francine
at nationallibertyalliance.org, and let her know what you're looking to do. She will connect you with a guy named Ron, R-O-N, and he runs the welcoming committee, and they've got a small group that make phone calls and discuss with them what you'd like to do, and we want people to call other people and try to reactivate them, you know?
And just to be sure, Francine is F-R-A-N-C-E-N-E?
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
All right, thanks for the call.
I look forward to seeing what you think of my letter, because I think I brought up some pretty good points.
And we do need a lot of people on the national level, anybody that wants to volunteer to assist us. I mean, we have openings everywhere, district leaders. We've broken the United States up into 10 districts, so we need district people, leaders, who will help to organize the states. We need state coordinators, district coordinators, and then, of course, we need county people to organize the COS, the Committees of Safety. So
yes, I've been trying to contact people in my county to see if anybody is interested in going and having coffee and get this going here.
Well, once we set up the page, and hopefully it's real soon, once Carl gets that page set up, I will send out an email with instructions on what to do. And when your name goes onto that, you'll be able to go to that page on your county, and you'll be able to download a list of everyone in your state. And then you can pull the people in your county, call them up and talk to them, and try to convince them to come in and participate and so on. And then other county people will be doing the same. I mean, I know for me, and hopefully Gerard will continue with me, because we used to travel the state. I'm going to start traveling the state this spring and summer, helping to build committees of safeties in all the counties in my state. I'm going to work diligently to do that. I'll go out and speak to these people, lay it out, and you know, try to convince them to participate and show them how we can help them to become empowered. Because right now, we have no power against our government. The only power we have is the end of a barrel of a gun, and we don't want to go there. We don't want to go there. So.
Very good.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Gerard, you got the board or you want me to handle it? Okay, we'll take Joe. Joe, go right ahead. You got the mic.
I was just wondering if we send these books out to the sheriffs, how do we know for sure that the sheriff himself actually gets it and it's not diverted from his by his staff?
Right.
I'm thinking the only way to really make sure is to have it sent to me personally and then have me send it in, signature required.
Well, what we can do is we will put on the package for the sheriff only, crime to intercept. We'll put that up on it. We will send it. I'm not sure how we're going to send it, whether we're going to send it in the name of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, or we're going. If we knew that a committee of safety was up and operating in that county, we would put it from the committee of safety in that county. But we would need to know that beforehand, and that would need to get on into the spreadsheet that we're working with addresses. We will be posting all of the sheriffs that we send handbooks to as we send them out. So we'll have a place where we'll post them. And once they go out, people in that county should follow up on that with their sheriff to make sure they got it. And the reason why we believe it's most important that we ship it out directly to the sheriffs instead of to the people, because some people have asked, they say, you know, we would like to send the book ourselves, so they want the book delivered to them, so we've sent it to them. But we still got to make sure that sheriff gets a book. We're still going to send that sheriff a book anyway, because we want to get it to every sheriff. And the key thing, it's being accompanied by a letter from other sheriffs. That's the key, okay? And that gives it more clout. And it'll direct them to be able to join that group of sheriffs, okay, which is they're working nationally to create a national group, constitutional sheriffs. So they'll be connected with that group. They'll be connected with their committees of safety, and they'll be connected with National Liberty Alliance, and they'll have a place for education for their deputies and themselves and so on.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Manisol, I don't know how to pronounce that name. Marisol. Is that it? Marisol? From California? You've been unmuted. Hello, Marisol. Marisol. Okay, not there. Who's chewing on them potato chips? Is that you, Gerard? I guess you got earplugs in, too. Okay, last call for Marisol in California. Caleb, if I'm pronouncing that right. C-A-L-E-B?
Caleb.
Caleb. Go right ahead.
Yes. Actually, this goes back to the first guy who started asking questions about violation of rights. I don't know all the codes, but if two or more people are in violation of someone's constitutional rights, they can actually be held accountable through fines, imprisonment, and possibly
death. Yeah, there's two codes, one under USC 18 and one, I believe, under USC 42. One is being civilly responsible for a lawsuit against them, and the other one is criminally involved, for a court to prosecute them criminally. Yeah, what about them?
There's just points I wanted to bring up to him so that he knows. Another one is the Constitution is founded on natural law, and if it's their statutes, which is legal, not lawful, are in violation of the Constitution under the Sixth Amendment, the Supremacy Clause, it's null and void of law at its inception, and it has no power to enforce.
That's correct.
So.
There's many U.S. Supreme Court decisions that quote that, and that's well established for a very long time. It goes back to ultimately to one of the first biggest court cases, Marbury versus Madison. I think that was 1802, if I recall, or somewhere
right
around there. And you can utilize that to apply it and. The problem is they're doing whatever they want, and they don't obey the law. It's worse now than, you know, you can look back 20 years ago, at least, if you push them in the right direction, they'll do the right thing because they're put on the line, they put the rear end on the line there. But over the past years, it's gotten worse and worse. Now a lot of them, they just don't care. They just totally break the law and do whatever they please and make it up as they go.
Well, so, this goes. This is kind of building up to a crescendo, so to speak, on in my opinion, on how it could be handled, at least at the local level, without violence. The next one is there is no war won by one by a single soldier. So if people unify and we go into the statutory courts dealing with traffic tickets or anything that is unlawful, because their Article I courts are unconstitutional. And you have 30 people there that are part of this committee of safety, and they're saying, hey, we're drawing a line in the sand. What are you going to do about it?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, there's no such thing as an Article I court. And I know the United States Supreme Court on their website speaks of an Article I court. The tax court, they claim, is an Article I court, and various other courts. No, they're administrative courts. They definitely are not Article I courts. Article I does not create a court. Article 2 creates the court, okay? That's where the court is created, the United States Supreme Court, and then, you know, also the federal district courts, the inferior courts, which are referred to as federal district courts. Now, in Article 1, under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, I forget which clause, there's about 18 or 19 clauses there, but one of the clauses, it states that the Congress has the ability to vest in courts inferior to the United States Supreme Court. And so what that is doing is just giving them the power to create the court. But the court must be an inferior court and it must be a constitutional court. So it's inferior to the United States Supreme Court, must be, number one. Number two, it must be a constitutional court. And a tax court is not a constitutional court. Now, when you talk about traffic court, now you're getting into state issues. And that's all for commercial activities. Has nothing to do with we, the people who are not driving commercial vehicles. Remember, they cannot make a law to govern our behavior in any way, shape, or form. Right. Now, fighting that is an uphill battle, and I win it 50% of the time, and the other 50% of the time I just pay the fine because I got to move on. But I have been collecting some cases and over the years, and at some point I'm going to go after them maybe. You know, the problem is, I'm taking a court case right now that's a traffic infraction, and I've had it with this town with these, they got me a couple of tickets, the same ticket over and over again, and I decided I'm not going to take it no more, so I'm going to take that to the federal court. So I will be doing a court case on that for myself.
Could you post it on your website?
I will post everything. Everything I do is posted up on the website. And I will post those court papers.
I want to go after them in the federal courts. Mm-hmm. I had a recent traffic ticket, and I told them, I said, hey, listen, I explained what they were doing is a writ of assistance, bill of attainder, and pains and penalties. They create the law. They're not giving me it's a violation of my constitutional rights because I don't get any trial by jury.
I wouldn't get too involved in a lot of the things. Keep it simple. And when you move it into the federal court, it must be kept completely simple because, remember, the federal court can only hear constitutional problems, okay?
Right.
So if you go after them for violating your right of due process, they don't have the authority. They're an equity court. If they're an equity court, well, they have to be an equity court because they're operating under commercial law. And they operate under a lot of laws, but one of them is commercial, those town courts. And so they're able to operate under the commercial laws that the state puts out that controls commercial activity. But since we're not performing commercial activity in our vehicles, we should not be bothered by them. And when they bother us, then they're going outside of their jurisdiction because they're an equity court, and the only court that can do anything to us is a court of law. And a court of law is one that has a jury that operates under common law, statutes not permitted. There are no statutes there.
Right.
So there has to be an injured party in order to bring something against you in a court of law, especially if they're pursuing something criminal.
And I also bring up that the other gentleman who is speaking and helping you out, explain things to him, if they want to take your vehicle, it's your choice on the escalation of violence in which you choose to handle it. But it's But and then the lady who was asking about the lawsuit, if they go to 1215.org, which is Bill Thornton's website, he mm-hmm. has, right when you bring that up, just to the right of it, it says law against Connecticut governor regarding the coronavirus, and it's legal paperwork, and they actually have some of the different explanations on the face masks and all this other stuff, establishing, you know, hey,
I gotta go. It's been a while since I've been out to his site. We have gleaned a lot of stuff from him. We've studied his stuff, and we agree with a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it, a good deal of it, and. But I, you know, I didn't think about going out to see if he has anything out there on this virus thing and masks and all that stuff. I'll definitely go out there to see what I can glean off of his site on that.
And then
because I do have a case on that coming up myself. I haven't filed it yet, but I'm getting ready to file it against three individuals in the post office where I live.
Well, if I had your legal knowledge, what I would like to do is actually unify all the small businesses here, at least in Tucson, into a class action lawsuit and actually go after the state of Arizona. But I don't know. I don't have the wherewithal.
Well, again, look at you can achieve this pretty simply. If it's a desire and putting the time in, it's that simple. We have all of the tools and necessary information for you to accumulate all the knowledge that we have, because all the knowledge we have is on paper and on this website. And of course, communications, forward. Conversations, what is it? How does it go? Iron sharpens iron, you know. So when you have conversation, sword against sword, so to speak, you know, conversation back and forth, it sharpens our abilities and understandings and so on.
Yep.
We need to bring the government. We don't want to do a lawsuit against the state. We want to force the state to obey the Constitution, and it's very simple. Let's take control and become elected committeemen. Okay. When we become elected committeemen, we can pull them out of office when they violate the law. You know, it's a very simple job for committeemen to recall. Very, very simple. They just have to get together and agree, this guy's got to go. And once you get that going, you can pull all kinds of people out of office, including up and to the President of the United States. I mean, that would be a huge job, because you'd have to have, you know, people in every state, and then it would have to be a certain percentage of the counties, like 75% of the counties. It would require a huge number. It would be almost an impossible task, maybe. But you can force, if the president's breaking the law, you can force Congress to do their job and impeach. And the president, after coming out of office, could be indicted for crimes. But other than that, that's the only difficult office to deal with on a recall. You know, we'd have to look at the Constitution and be a little more careful in our thinking on the recall for that, because there is a process to remove a president, and maybe that's one office we can't remove them from.
Well, I could be wrong, but I think it's the Congress and all, you know, the three. There's ways that we're supposed to be able to do that, and if we had the right people
impeachment.
In office.
Right. They can be impeached. If they're impeached and through the Senate can, the end results could be removal from office.
So, assuming we actually had people had the wherewithal and weren't corrupt.
We need constitutionalists in there. We need statesmen. We need people who are going to honor their oath. And we have to have enforcement of the honor of that oath. And that's where the committees of safety come in. They have the power and the ability to enforce that they make sure that they honor their oath or yank them from office, and if necessary, even indict them. You can indict anyone in office.
Well, if it's
with the exception of the president.
They had, the 5,000-year leap in the book. They mm-hmm. basically were supposed to have a modest salary, and that's something else I think that they should impose. And also start investigating people who actually come out of office having obviously more money than they should.
Right. Well, look at... Again, the committeemen can restrict the number of times they could be elected by refusing to walk their papers, number one. We can pressure them to write legislation to control themselves, okay?
Right.
So there's a lot we can do, but the people have to get involved. They have to get the committees of safety up, start learning how to become committeemen, and some people need to run for committeemen. Everybody's got to be involved with the militia and supporting the militia. We got to get together with our sheriffs. We got to get the administrations going, taking control of our courts, So we've got a lot of work to do, but we need to do it, and we need to do it now. This is a window of opportunity that will never happen again for us.
And the last question I had, well, everything else was a statement. This is more of a question. With that book that we're actually going to be purchasing for the sheriff, I was curious if for the people who do purchase it, if we could actually get a PDF file as well so we actually know what we're sending to the sheriff and have that information for ourselves.
Well, what you could do is, well, people should buy themselves a book because inside this book covers a lot of things. Let me quickly go through that for anybody that's watching over on a the browser or even, I guess, the smartphones, maybe you can see this stuff also. Here, when you click on the book, but Government by Consent, we've got a lot of information. For instance, we have a table of contents. You can also click, if anybody's watching, if you click here, it says preface, click here to read the book's preface, and if you click on that, it's a 15-page PDF, which is really a synopsis of the book. So it gives you a good insight on what it is and what it's about. But also, we list all of the chapters of the book and the different topics that we cover. And we cover everything, Government by Consent. We cover the law, American history, the grand and petit jury, the history of the sheriff. We cover the court systems, the process, what is law, what is equity. I mean, just numbers, you know, underneath that alone, the courts of record, the courts of law, courts of record, equity courts, court not of record, jurisdiction, jurisdictional requirement, federal jurisdictions. I mean, with this book, you got everything you need to really go into court, and you can draw a lot of stuff out of this book. And also with papers we've written all over the website, we have an introduction to the founding documents, which we go blow by blow to a certain depth, the Declaration of Independence. We, of course, the Constitution itself and its capstone Bill of Rights. We have all of the different articles that are connected and all of the amendments. We have, we have a chapter on the committeemen, how they got expunged, how we're going to be able to bring them back up to power and authority. We have a chapter on the militia. We have memorandums of law, which we have about 27 of them listed here, but we have more than 27, so we have quite a few. And these memorandums of law can be used in your courts of law to support legal arguments, okay? We have our plan to save the Republic, and then we have an appendix, which has a lot of great stuff on it. You know, for instance, President Trump's inauguration speech, which was a very powerful speech. We have Washington's farewell address, extremely powerful address. Probably at least two-thirds of that, probably, or close to it, is all on parties and the problem with parties and why we shouldn't have political parties, okay? Well. And, you know, we have to follow our founding fathers and study them and execute what they've executed, and then we will have Government by Consent. And until we do that, we're not going to have Government by Consent. And if anybody thinks that Trump is going to save the nation and we don't have to do nothing and we can go on our merry way, you're going to lose your liberty again anyway in the future. It's all going to happen again unless the people take control.
Correct. For anybody who's listening, that book, The 5,000-Year Leap, I think is probably one of the most informative books that I've read. I'm sure your book is probably extremely informative.
I've read the 500-Year Leap, and if you go up to our website, I'm trying to see where it's at. I think it's under education, and you come to books, okay? I think under books. Yeah, we have 5,000-Year Leap under books, so education books, 5,000-Year Leap. We have it in audio, and we also have it in PDF. You can listen and read it at the same time. We have all the Federalist Papers. You can listen and read them at the same time. We've got the Anti-Federalist Papers. We've got so much stuff, books up there. We've got lots and lots of stuff. So we have a much higher education than the education we're given through the book, for instance, Government by Consent, and the course that we put together, Government by Consent. Anybody that wants to go further to a higher education, well, we've got it up here.
Well, see, that's the reason why I like the 5,000-Year Leap. It was very easy to digest. I started
powerful,
trying to
read
the Federalist.
It's a good introduction.
Right, and because when I started doing the Federalist Papers, It almost felt like you'd read a chapter and you'd have to sit and digest it and then read it again just to make sure you got the proper context and the information that you needed out of it. So
absolutely.
It was very,
what's really nice is being able to listen to it on, put on. They're all MP3s. You can download them, and you can put them on your MP3 player. And when you're driving to work or running around or just kicking back to listen. You know, I usually in the summertime I put these things on my stereo on my back porch and maybe go in the pool or do some exercising and stuff, and I'm listening to that stuff as I'm doing that. And when you listen to it over and over and over again, like I listened to Bill Thornton's stuff many times, and if you listen to it over and over and over again, it starts to just spill out of your mouth, you know.
I need to get his library. I listen to a lot of it on YouTube.
Well, bear in mind, his King of the Court is wrong. You are not the King of the Court. You're on the King's bench at best, but you're the sovereign of the court, okay? And you're coming to the, and the King's bench is the jury, and the King is God himself. We're under his law. So, and he says his law is written in the hearts of men. So everybody knows the law, you know, thou shalt not kill. You can't injure another person, you know.
Correct.
So it's very simple. So God's the King of the Court. The juries are the King's bench. They're to represent the King. And when you go into the court against someone, you are a sovereign. But, you know, remember, the other side could be a sovereign too. If you're going up against the government, that's a different story. You're the sovereign of the court. They are not.
It's the whole idea of us going to court against somebody else. It's you file a claim for which relief could be granted. And if there is no relief that can be granted, then you really don't have a case.
Yeah, but again, if you're putting your papers before a judge to make a decision, you're in the wrong court.
Right. You decide,
and the jury will decide on whether you have any merit to your case or not, period, end of subject. They will conclude at the end of the day whether you have a case, whether you've been injured, and if that person injured you, and how you could be restored.
So the law is often in question just as much as the I forgot what it is, but yeah, you basically have to question the law itself. Of course, not natural law; it speaks for itself. But as much as the whether the person's guilty or not. So, and that's where jury nullification comes in.
Jury nullification. First of all, they can't bring a statute against you. Mm-hmm. Unless you've been violated for something operating, you know, under commercial activity that they need to control, and you violate those controls because we gave them those powers. Well, then they can apply those things, and those are administrative laws, courts. They're not criminal courts. You know, they can put you in jail for that. Equity courts ultimately do not have the power to fine or incarcerate. They could fine, but they can't incarcerate. Nope. It's got to be a law court. You know, if you take, for instance, the federal codes, half of the federal codes, I think it's 26 of them, there's 57 altogether, I think, and half of them, about 26 of them, are enacted law. So under those enacted laws, they could apply certain things. But if they're going to apply criminal against you, even under those things, a jury must be called. A judge can't make that decision. Although they're doing it, and we're so ignorant, we don't know, and we're allowing them to do it.
Yep. And that's the whole point of habeas corpus, is when you go into criminal justice court to challenge the actual jurisdiction. So.
They can decide on a fine if it's enacted law, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not enacted law, then they can't fine. They certainly can incarcerate. They can contempt. They can incarcerate you for contempt. Mm-hmm. But other than that, once it becomes criminal and they want to put you in jail, it's got to move to a jury trial, period, end of subject.
Oh, according to...
And you have to be indicted first.
The Constitution itself, any fine imposed over $20... And it's funny because most of the...
Case over with a value over $20, you can require a jury.
Right, and it's funny because most states, they have statutes in place, or it's in the Constitution, their state constitution that says, hey, if it's more than $5,000 or $10,000, it has to be taken to the Supreme Court. But they have all these rules, but it's funny, if you know about the Supremacy Clause, and you know just the first 10 articles, this first 10 articles, I can't remember, my brain's not working, but if you know your rights, they are just walking all over it. And if people just understood the Supremacy Clause, it cleans up a lot of the bullshit. I guess it just cuts out the bullshit.
Yeah, well, again, they will fight tooth and nail to keep jurisdiction, and they will get vindictive over you when you challenge their authority. They don't like that, and that they're acting like terrorists, ultimately, in my opinion. But, you're right, but bear in mind, that doesn't mean they're going to follow the law, because they break the law all day long.
Well, that goes back to that whole thing of, I like the idea of, if I got a group of individuals together and you have 30 people who are, not saying you're carrying guns into court, but basically saying, hey, there's 30 of us, we agree with it, I disagree with what you're saying, we have this on camera, we know you're not right, and if you decide to move, then here's the line in the sand. If you want them, come get them. Come take my money, come take my property, because the whole point is, if I do something by myself, they could sweep it under the rug, the media can ignore it, you know, my family may not have enough of a voice, but if you have 30 to 50 people saying, and they decide to go anyway, it becomes a huge problem. So, and that's where the pressure comes from, not so much just...
Well, again, if you have committees of safety going, you get a relationship with the sheriff becomes knowledgeable in the Constitution, then he's going to understand what the difference of law is and what a crime is and so on and so forth. All these traffic violations, no matter what they be, unless it's brought into a common law court, these violations, sometimes they put people in jail for these things. The sheriff should be rejecting them. You bring a prisoner to the county jail, and the sheriff should look at the paperwork and see what kind of court, and see that this is a court that is not a court of record, doesn't have the power of authority, is operated under equity or some other craziness. It's jurisdictions unknown is what I call it. And so therefore, we're not taking this prisoner. You can't bring this person here. They were not lawful. What are they going to do with the prisoner? And the sheriff should be able at that point protect the person, release him, actually, what they should do.
Correct.
The judge, I'm trying to think of the judge's name. I'll think of it and I'll bring it up later if I can think of it. But there's a judge that went up for Supreme Court. Reagan brought him up and they didn't get him in. But one of the statements he said was that 80% of the people in prison or in county jail particularly are there unlawfully, and the only reason they're there is because they opened their mouth. In other words, they participated with giving them the jurisdiction by responding with them. So if you go in and in these courts and you start challenging their jurisdiction, you tell them you're there for only under a special appearance to test the validity of the authority of the court, and by the way, you don't have it, they'll keep putting it off and off. But the bottom line is that once you go in once, and at that point you want to sue them directly for violating your right of due process, and you sue the prosecutor, you sue the judge in federal court. But that's an uphill battle too. And part of the wherefore clause in that one, which is the conclusion of what you're looking for the courts to do, the wherefore clause, at that point what you really want is them for cease and desist. So you want a cease and desist order, and then you want restitution for the injury of your unalienable rights violated by them. I usually use a rule of thumb, $1,000 face value, Morgan silver dollars. So that's about, at this point, today's market, that's about, $28,000 for every 1,000? You know, I think it's about 26, 27, maybe 28, let's say 27 cent, $27 a coin for a Morgan silver dollar. So right there is $27,000. That's a lot of money.
My last traffic ticket, there's a lot of things I brought up. I said, listen, what you guys are trying to do, it's a contract. It's a one-sided contract, and I can't remember what they actually call it. The sheriff's
right.
There should be two defensing. There's the bailiff, which means if the judge is doing something wrong, the bailiff's supposed to be there to block the judge and enforce to make sure people's rights are ensured. And then when you go to jail, it's supposed to be the responsibility of the sheriff to actually make sure that all the papers are in place and everything, all the checks are checked off and you're there. But you're supposed to be there, and they don't do that.
Well, yeah, you know, local police forces, really, they're making citizens' arrests, ultimately, because, you know, the real law enforcer is the sheriff, and he is supposed to make sure all the paperwork is together when someone is brought into their prison, or if he's called out on the road because someone's violating their rights, like maybe a city cop or something, and you call them, and the sheriff's supposed to protect you as long as you're on the right there. But with that, we should move on to someone else and try to stay more focused on committees of safety and organizing them in our counties.
Sure thing. No, I appreciate everything you guys are doing. You guys.
All right. Well, look, as soon as we get that page up, we'll send an email out. Click on the button to organize your county, and let's start getting these committees of safety in our counties. That's the only thing that's going to save America.
You give me the A to Z's on how to do it in a step-by-step, like a cookbook.
Well, shows. Did you come in late today? What time did you come in?
I came in about 7:40. I think I missed a good portion of what your initial...
Okay, because you can go up and listen, because we did go through the A to Z of what to do in the counties. And everything we're talking about is found under people's duty. You can come up to the page here, the weekly call page, and on that page is all of the audio that you can download on tonight's program and last week's and so on.
All right, I'll go ahead and get that.
And we'll get a video up on this one also, hopefully real soon. I'm waiting for the tech to work out what has to be done so we can start uploading some videos.
Okay. If it helps, you can always look up on how to stream. I think it's... what do they call it?
We are streaming. Carl is streaming for us. Plus, we have two other sites that we have, videos on. But no, there's certain videos that we don't want to necessarily. We'll put them on YouTube, but they may be thrown off because we start off with a song and they usually violate us for a song. but I want to put it up on our webpage and. The important ones, like the ones that are focusing in on a very specific subject that turns out to be a good educational, open forum and lecture or whatever you want to call it. Those are the ones we do want to put up where people can go to the page and view them.
Well, thank you so much for what you guys are doing, and God bless everybody out there.
Just get involved, you know.
Thank
we
you.
All got to do our part. Thank you. Okay, Gerard, where'd you go? Vale, I think, is the next person. Go right ahead, Vale. Let's try to stay on point, focused on government by consent and organizing our counties.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Hi, I just, in reference to you saying you are in a dispute with the post office, were you denied service or did they just...
I was denied service. I was told never to come back there again.
Okay. I keep getting harassed at my post office, and so do my children, and they keep yelling at me that I need a mask, and I keep saying no, and they just... But I didn't know if you were actually denied or just...
Well, I'll be putting up a page on that issue very shortly, as soon as I... Well, hopefully in the next week or two, I want to write the papers, and then I'll put everything up, and if you want, you can kind of glean off the stuff that I'm using. What state are you in?
Colorado.
Colorado. What is there, an executive order?
So they claim, but I just...
Okay.
They ask for county mandates, they post, but that...
Right. Well, that's not law to begin with. You know, law has to be legislated, and it can't be legislated against the people. They have no authority over us. They can require themselves to wear masks. They can require other people working for the government or people operating commercial activity in some way to go somewhere to wear masks, but they can't require the people to wear masks, number one. Number two, they don't work. We all know that. You need a hazmat suit to stop a virus. A mask is not going to stop a virus. Even the 95s that they have are supposed to be the most powerful, you know, the best mask out there. That's not going to stop a virus either. The virus is like an eighth smaller than that, the holes that it can get through, or whatever that is. At least here in New York, when the governor wrote a requirement for the people, he did put down there anybody medically able to tolerate a mask. You see, they don't. When you go into a store or any, they don't want to hear that. They're so ignorant. Oh, you got to wear a mask. They frighten them to begin with. It's a problem.
It makes me absolutely sick that I'm the only person in the supermarket not wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that come up to me and think they have a right to tell me to put one on.
Yeah, I get that all the time, too.
It just blows my mind where people think. I look at people and I say, wow, Stalin would have loved you.
And they won't even allow you for having a conversation because I carry a piece of paper. I carry the executive order in my pocket, in my shirt pocket, and I pull it out to unfold it, and I try to explain to them. They won't even look. They won't talk to you, nothing. All they know is you got
to
put a mask on.
People at the post office, I tried to show her papers when she screamed at me at the law, and I said, no.
That's what they did to me. Exactly. And one of them took the authority to say, you can never come into this post office again, you know. I've been
in
there a couple of times since. But, yeah?
In my town, we don't get mail at our house because we're in the mountains, so we have to use the post office.
Well, it doesn't matter. The post office for you to use anyway. You got to make mail and send mail out. I'm mailing stuff all the time. Because, we mail a lot of papers out to different, government agencies and, government officials and a lot of court papers and regular mail. So I'm there all the time. These people are sick, really. They're lost. They're lost. They're slaves.
I wish more people would take it off, would take the mask off. It would make it easier. But my other question is, I was part of a recall committee to recall some of our town councilors that just do whatever they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And now the town is trying to sue me and the people on the recall committee.
Yeah, it's called communism.
Yeah. So I've done my rebuttal. I have not submitted it yet because legally I have not been served yet. Everyone else on the committee has been except for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've prepared a rebuttal just in case. Should I counter sue them for such a
you could countersue them if you wanted to. We'd have to think it out. What exactly you're trying to recall someone and they're coming out after you in some way vindictively because they don't like recalling somebody?
We tried to recall 3 town council members because they just do whatever they want.
Did you succeed at the process?
Well, we just got the signatures required, and then there was the dispute. The town tried to reject it, saying we don't have enough signatures to validate the recall, and this was just to get a ballot measure.
Yeah, well, you have to you apply all your paperwork, and if you did it lawfully and according to the procedures of the election law within that state, and you followed everything and you put a nice package together and they refused to accept it and adhere to it, then that's when you bring it into the state court there in your county.
They refuse to accept it. And
in the court?
At the town level, they refuse to accept it. And then they're suing us for even bringing it on,
mm-hmm.
saying that they claim we don't have
enough.
Well,
are you a committee person?
On the recall committee? Yes.
No, what is a recall committee?
It was just they needed a group of people to enact.
Yeah, this is normally, not that the people themselves can't do it because they can, but the organized group of people that should do it and can do it and have power to do it is the committee man, the elected committee man or committee woman, you know. But, that's why you should learn to become an elected committee man and work through the process. And believe me, that has power and clout. And when the county committee chair calls up anybody that they helped or assisted or put onto the ballot to get into office, when that chairman calls up with a problem or a complaint and they tell them how to fix that complaint, they are going to listen and they're going to obey the county chairman because they owe the job to the county chairman. County chairman can organize a movement to pull them out of office. And there is a process. You know, I've been and talked to some people who want to do these things, and I told them, look, you got to follow the process. There's a layout in the law, and each state has laws that you just follow the process, and if you violate any of those processes, it's invalid.
We followed all the processes.
Okay.
They are saying the dispute is on the mathematical equation of whether only votes count or undervotes also count. And
what does that mean?
They want a ruling. They're claiming, which I haven't looked in Black's Law Dictionary, and there's no term undervote. They're claiming an undervote because there were on the election ballot, there were 6 candidates and three positions, but some people would only vote for one candidate, so they're saying those votes that were not cast are supposed to be part of the tally for the calculation of the percentage for the recall, which is just...
Well, if they wouldn't count, no, it's the number of, if the number of votes, number of lawful votes cast, okay, they work off that percentage. If you wanted to recall a governor, for instance, you have to get a certain percentage of the actual votes cast in that last election, and that'd be lawful votes. And then also for going after a governor, I think it's in New York, it's 3/4 of the county. So you have to have a certain percentage out of 3/4 of the counties. And that's one of the requirements for a recall for that particular political subdivision, being that of the governor, the state.
And we had the right percentage for number of lawful votes cast, yeah. But they're trying to...
The only thing you could do it is take it into the state court. And if the state court kicks it out and doesn't permit it to go through, then you can move into the federal court. Believe me, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to rule on that. Well, we'd have to think about that. It is an equity court, so it's not a criminal act, so a judge can rule on that because that's their decision. the question is trying to couch it to bring it into a federal court if the state courts don't acknowledge it. And we'd have to think that out a little bit.
But can we countersue on the basis that they are trying to block our redress of grievances that is guaranteed in the First Amendment?
Well, again, uphill battle, a lot of time. You need to be educated to do it. Most lawyers won't do it. They'll ask a lot of money to begin with if they were going to do it. Look, the simplest way is start a committee of safety and pull all those people out of power. By working
right,
through the committeeman process. The committeeman can yank them all out.
Right, but even if we start the committee right now, this is going to take time for anyone to acknowledge the committee, and then, they'll be out of office by the time...
Well, the acknowledgement of the elected committeeman should run pretty quickly once we get the deep state out of the way. Because once that's out of the way and we get people who are going to apply justice and in the courts, that's when we can move forward and be able to do what we have to do. And it's only going to require one court case on a federal level for everybody concerning the power and the authority of an elected committeeman, which is our unalienable right to have government by consent. And once we win that one case, then that could be applied upon all. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury will spearhead that case and will support anybody that has to have assistance by using the authority of that case in their counties.
But, so is this a pending case right now that we're waiting on, or one has yet?
No, it's a that particular case we have to wait to file yet. We haven't filed that case because we have to wait. First of all, we got to get elected committeemen into the process, and then they have to be denied, and that's when we could take it into court. So sometime next year, we'll probably do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, it's getting a little late, but we'll take another caller or two. Let's see. Let's take Debbie here. What's that, from Georgia? Debbie?
Okay. I had to make sure I was on. I've got a couple of questions to ask, but I'm not feeling too well tonight, so... Just bear with me.
Okay.
I've gone through 2 years of two different dispossessed reactions that were unlawful. And when I say unlawful, they actually tried to take our home away from us. We're two disabled people. And I've suffered almost the loss of my eyesight from tap water contamination here on the rental lot. Never been behind on rent. Apparently the EPD here in Georgia says I have put them on the, I've actually put Sunnyland Community Mobile Home Park on the map. And you can take that for what it's worth.
Are they trying to evict you or trying to foreclose on you? Are you renting or you use the mortgage?
No, sir. We own our trailer. We've owned it since the day we took possession of it.
Okay, so you're renting the plot that it sits on in a trailer park or something?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
Okay. At the same time, I've had to fight an unethical That's the only way I can put it right now. Unlawful, unethical appeals for my Social Security disability. I was CIPRO injured back in 2000 and wound up having to live almost 10 years in my car. Back in 2012, I met a veteran with a brain injury. I did not know he was a veteran. I did not know he had a brain injury. All I knew is that something wasn't quite right. He was a very kind-hearted person, and he had actually, he's 52 years old and ran away from home. I couldn't put all of it together. I had met him through my son, and I was living in my car, and I said, get in the car, Ken. Got to make a way for us. That's all I knew. Well, it took me a year and a half to get his, not only his military record, but his disability file, and come to find out that in 83 he had actually nosedived off of an interstate bridge on I-75. He was pronounced dead, and they somehow, God had a hand in this, they resuscitated him. He was in a coma for 2.5 months and kind of pretty much in a vegetative state when he came out. So he's he had to learn how to walk, talk, eat, and everything all over again. Well, about 3 years after he come out of Warm Springs, he ran away and joined the Army. Didn't know he had a brain injury and was not allowed to be told because he was 1 week from his 18th birthday when this happened. And the even his medical records, his doctor's statement says that, that it's not a good idea that he be told and not a good idea that anybody be told around him because they would treat him differently. Well, I thought for
so
you.
So what's the question? Is the question, okay, what's the question?
Okay, the question is, it took all that long to get his disability pushed through. That's what bought our trailer in 2015. This trailer was paid cash for the day that we bought it.
Uh-huh.
We've never been behind on lot rent, and apparently
well, why are they trying to kick you out?
Well, because I had kept trying to get the water tested because we were getting particles in the water through the tap water lines, and I didn't know at the time we were in the middle of 4 Superfund sites.
Did you take down to the health department?
The health department down here, you might as well be trying to get to the post office, and we're having our own issues with the post office.
Look, you know, you can talk to an engineer or someone who does these kind of things, and you know, they would charge you a fee to do it, and it wouldn't be that bad. But there's different people, contractors do it. I do it. I used to do it when I was doing general contracting, construction management. Whenever we dealt with a home going in and we had a well coming up or whatever the case may be, you know, we had to test the water, and it was just a matter of getting the necessary bottles from the health department, putting it in those bottles, and giving it in, and 2, 3, 4 days later, you get the results, and, you know, you don't tell them what it's for. It's none of their business. It's a regular business. It's a process that they have to go for. So you could do that. And if there is a problem with the water, maybe it's something that can be dealt with filters. Maybe it's not anything that's, you know,
John, it's 11 contaminants all the way from radium-228 to radium-226. We've had 4 people
then with
die.
Then with that, you should be able to go to the health department. The health department should be able to deal with that.
I went straight to the CDC, and they were stopped from sending me the report. They were supposed to be sending me a 30-page report so I could file it in the court. We prima facie now. How about not me pronouncing the word correctly?
You're talking prima facie?
Yes, we prima facie now because it wound up being a retaliatory dispossessory, and it just so happens that our governor signed a law into effect. If a health environmental issue had been reported to a government agency and a landlord tried to evict you, then you prima facie, I guess is the way you say it, in the case. Well, the judges, I had appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court of Georgia. I did this on my own. And half the time I can't even stand to keep my eyes open. My eyes are in such critical condition right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I'm the only one that can do this. Kenneth's got a brain injury. Kenneth can't do it. I do it on my own. So while it was at the Supreme Court, the judge, well, keep in mind, I was also fighting for my Social Security disability. The judge in Peach County issued an order to pull my pauper's affidavit, so my case pancaked immediately. And as soon as it pancaked that same week, the attorney came back in and filed another dispossessed reaction, and that was a year ago in July. So I came back on both the judges and the magistrate court, the superior court, and filed an injunction for an indictment against both of them under 42 U.S.C. 1983, I believe is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. District.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the U.S. District Court wanted to put a halt on me, saying that the judges had immunity. Well, no. I filed another petition with the court, trying to explain that the immunity was abrogated under the I think it's the fifth section of the 11th Amendment. I'll have to look back on my paperwork, but you know
what,
exactly where I'm going with it.
What's the final disposition, and what are you trying to do?
Okay.
That? I mean, what's the final disposition at this point?
Okay. The judge in one case, it's wound up being tied up. Both now, my disability case now is tied up with the litigation that's in Peach County now. Okay, I cannot get a resolve at this point. I finally got the judge's attention when I named them as defendants. The attorney has no position to speak. He came in and sued us for two dispossessories. Keep in mind, I got scabs that form over my eyes. And it just so happened I looked down at the affidavits and realized there's no name on the affidavit. He brought an action into court without an affidavit.
Well, again, you'd have to bring that up to the court. The court should have recognized that and made the ruling accordingly, because a sworn affidavit rules the court, and the judge didn't do anything. Well, look at you. You should go to the appeal for that, because you should be able to win on that, because your affidavit should have ruled that court.
I know that. Well, I came back, and what I realized is not only me, but they had actually dispossessed 57 people in this 60 lot trailer park in a year and a half, and only 17 of them had a name on their affidavits. When the judge saw me buying this information, I had to pay for it through the clerk of court. He come in and literally cussed me out in the clerk of court's office. So he got, you know, he quickly got named as the defendant too. So he has put in a resignation. So he's no longer with Peach County as their magistrate court judge. The clerk of court put in a registration. He put in a registration.
Right, but what is the final disposition? Because we can't go through the whole case, and this isn't what we necessarily do. We do it as to try to assist
that.
People and give them some thoughts and ideas on what they can do. And in many cases, if it's criminal, particularly they need a habeas corpus, or it's criminal, and or if they're robbing their house with a non-judicial foreclosure. Whether it be mortgage or tax, you know, we can assist people with that by writing an amicus curiae paper, filing it with the court, and then if they refuse to obey the law, then we can move it into our case for cause and as a joinder. And at some point in time, when we finally get all of our, would we start to get justice in our court, because we do have a court of record opened, people will get justice. But again, you know, this case, what's the final disposition? Where are you at right now?
There is nothing. The last time we went before the judge, he finally pulled off the case. He recused himself, but it took about 4 months to force him into that position. So I don't have a name of a judge now. They've not assigned a new judge. It's been pending since June 29th of last year. And I did appeal my Social Security disability case, and eyesight damages included. And I got a letter from the judge 4 days ago. I've got 10 days to get this in to meet the appeals time to keep my Social Security disability. And he was making me what's called an offer. And if I don't accept his offer,
This is a different case. You're talking about
this is the Social Security case? This is the Social Security. Yes, okay. Sir. Yes, sir. And this has to do also with my eye injury that was suffered here. Mm-hmm. Well, he had issued a decision and wants me to accept it. And he didn't give me a hearing. The Court of Appeals required him to give me a file for a res judicata appeal for hearing. So they issued an order for him to rehear the case. Well
you look at, you have a right of assistance of counsel. You have a right of assistance of counsel, and they should be able to, because you're on limited income, they should give you an address or a phone number or some office where you can contact somebody and get assistance of counsel. Now, you sounds like you can run your own case. You just need someone to assist you and figure out what's going on here, because they're making legal maneuvers on you. And you need to understand what they are, and the only way you're going to figure that out is with some legal counsel. Now, if you wanted to, you could probably hire, you know, take the lawyer on. Again, they'll do it for percentage, which I don't like. I would never do that. But
no lawyer.
But some people have to do that. You know, some people.
No lawyer. I called around 50 attorneys in the last year.
No. You talk to that administrative judge, the court. You find out and get the office, the name of the number of the office that'll handle to give you the assistance of counsel. And you call those people up and you tell them you just want an assistant of counsel. You want someone to help you out with the case. You don't want them to run your case, because if you run the case and they take a percentage, usually it's a third, you know, what they do of whatever you win. But you should be able to get assistance of counsel. You have a right to it. And it's administrative. It's not going into any of the law courts. It's an administrative process. You can eventually pull it into the Supreme Court. Did you do that yet?
I pulled it into the Supreme Court of Georgia, okay. The first case.
Yeah, you
can
pull it into that.
The Social Security case is fixed and go back up to the Court of Appeals. I've got to wait for another decision for them to render before I can put it in a federal court again. This one actually goes into a federal court. That's where I'm at.
Okay, and so you're in a federal court? Well, I guess it would be, because Social Security, yeah. So you could, that would be the proper place to go into a federal court for that, because it's a federal administrative process, and you go through that process,
right.
And you move
right.
through the steps. You should be able to get justice. Have they heard that case yet, or are they rejecting you too?
No, I have to wait for another decision. See the court.
Oh, okay. Well, look, I think you're going to make some traction in that case when you get into the federal court, because look at there's no status quo that they need to maintain in the federal court concerning administrative things. And more than likely, they're going to just apply whatever the process of that administrative, which is statutes or codes or regulations or whatever that process is, they're going to apply that. And so you should be able to get justice without a problem, because you're not going up against the status quo per se. It's just
I am. I'm going up and I'm coming up against their jurisdiction.
Yeah, but again, it's administrative court. Yeah. You're going up against individuals who really are abusing the process. If you're right, they're abusing the process.
Yes, they are.
But you should get it settled in that federal court. That they should be able to settle it for you. The other case is a different story altogether. And, you know, we're over our time, and we've been on a long time, and we don't normally get too involved in cases. You've explained a lot, but... you know, I don't know how we can help you on that per se. If it's something that is a problem, and I'd have to think it out. You know, we only take on, there's a certain criteria we have for taking on cases and joining it to our case, and you have to fall within that criteria, only because we're not, you know, we don't have a staff of lawyers, we don't have people to work through the process and deal with each case, so it has to fall into a category, and then we can, you know, file papers that are sort of generic in the sense that it's a form papers that we file, and we usually deal with cases that are violating of due process, usually.
Violating my due process.
Well, if you want to do something with that, write an affidavit, fill out a form, get it to Jim, intake at National Liberty Alliance, and if it could fit within our criteria, we'll work with you best we can. We'll do an amicus curiae paper for you, and if they don't serve obedience to that, then we will attach it as a joinder, and at some point in time, when we get to the other side, the deep state's got to be gone before we could do anything. And once that's gone, then we can start to get justice in the courts. And we're indicting a lot of judges, and I have a feeling a lot of judges are going to be arrested.
Now, I've come in and recorded me and Ken as 11 men and women on the land. We have a reservation of rights that had to be filed with the land in the Superior Court in the land records.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like that either. But yeah. They don't have a choice. You know, I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm a living woman. I'm not
You got to be careful with that. I know people are teaching people to give up their U.S. citizenship. Look, they robbed the title U.S. citizen and trying to make it, and they try to make the 14th Amendment say something that it doesn't say. I mean, you could see that it could hold the water in their position on one side, and it holds water on the constitutional side.
Yeah.
The thing is the constitutional side is the one that should overtake and rule on the case. Bear in mind, if you go and get rid of your citizenship and say, I'm no longer a citizen, and you file those papers, you could be deported. Okay? Now, I haven't heard of anybody being deported, but the fact is you're a person without a country. You're not a citizen of this country anymore, this nation, shall I say, within your state.
Well, state, nationally.
Yeah, but again, we are citizens. The Constitution uses the word citizen. I don't remember how many times, 4 or 5 times it uses the word citizen. There's reference to citizens. There's nothing wrong with being a citizen. We're sovereign people, sovereign citizens. And we are part of a political, I don't want to call it a subdivision, but the political process. And only U.S. citizens can vote. And you have a right to be able to move from one state to another. You know, we're natural. Many of us are natural born citizens. Some of us, you know, are not necessarily born citizens. But I know there are people teaching, and I fell into this trap myself, and I was believing it, following through it. But I got further educated and discovered it's not the way to go. First of all, they don't take you serious. Number one, they think you're a nut. Number two. A lot of people don't understand what you're talking about. I understand what you're talking about. But there really is no need to give up your citizenship. None whatsoever. And because a lot of people, they'll get out there and teach you, once you give up the citizen, you got all these powers now. They can no longer do this. They can no longer do that. You can go into a court, click your heels, and you find yourself being transported into a court of justice. Nothing like that is going to happen. And you're just injuring yourself. Stick to the facts, stay with the law, and put equity where equity belongs and law where law belongs.
Well, I got equity jurisdiction finally in one case, but like I said, it hasn't moved to July or June.
Your case is an equity case, so because it's administrative, so... But you should be able to get justice in a court of law in a federal level. But talking about the one with the I'm talking about the Social Security one. Now the one with the house, with the trailer on the property, that's another story. That should be dealt with in a court of law.
Well, it took forever to get a court of record.
Yeah, that's a court of law. Court of record is a court of law. But that means you have a jury and not a judge.
No, we had requested trial by jury of our peers, and I've yet to have it.
To shy away from that. Anyway, with that, we got to go. It's 20 minutes past. I got to get to sleep, and I got to get up in the morning. But send a paper to Jim, and we'll take a look at it to see if we can do anything with it. We can only do certain kinds of cases because otherwise we have to study the case, get into the details, find a strategy, and apply it, and it becomes something outside of what we're doing. And the only reason we're taking on cases, we really started taking on only cases that people have their children taken away, people with habeas corpus, need the habeas corpus because they're in jail, or people who've lost their homes. And we're doing certain other cases also, but those are the main ones that we wanted to try to help people, and we're attaching those cases to our courts, and especially the habeas corpus ones, or anybody that breaks the law in participating with the nonjudicial foreclosures, like a judge, then we're indicting those judges.
Well, I'm trying to keep our home so we don't wind it back out in the car again.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand that. Have you thought about, trying to move it and to another place and then continue with your case against them from another place?
That would be wonderful. But when they cap my Social Security check, I only get $664 a month.
Right.
It takes $5,000 to move the trailer.
Yes, I understand. Yeah, you're right.
We just got part of my disability, and that was $2,000 in March.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, look, just send a paper in to Jim and see what happens, and we'll see if we can deal with it, if it can fit within one of the criteria we've set up.
Okay, who is Jim now? Remember, I'm visually impaired.
Intake, I-N-T-A-K-E, intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay?
nationallibertyalliance.org.
Correct. All right, with that, we got to move on. Let me see. We got quite a few people in the queue. We're not going to be able to get to them. I'm sorry. It's
sorry
after 12, and we usually close down at 12, but we did go over quite a bit, matter of fact. All right, we're going to end the call right now. Thanks, everyone, for coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And please, everyone, get involved. It's time to save this nation. It's up to you to do it. It's up to us to do it. And don't think the other guy's doing it, because they're not. You need to do it. We need to build committees of safety in our counties, in our counties. And by the way, the problem with that this last caller had, that particular problem could have been dealt with by going to the grand jury and talking to the grand jury, and maybe even just talking to the Committee of Safety. There's numerous things that they could probably do and do a lot better because they're local. But again, we need to educate people in order to run those processes, and so everybody needs to get involved. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Again, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Thank you.